Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. On this week's Coach K and Joe Show, Pigs.com's Mike Pegram, Bill Somm, Chipola Community College head basketball coach Patrick Blake, and DC Broadcasting sports director Kurt Gupta. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schulteis.
The inbounder will be David Stockton. David Stockton gets it right now. Throws it up top. Jones intercepts it in the front court. 1 second. Puts up a floater. And he got it! 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 Roosevelt Jones with a runner at the buzzer. Ed Butler has knocked off Gonzaga. 64-63. Unbelievable. And it is absolute bedlam at Hinkle Fieldhouse.
Holy cow. What a finish.
What a finish. And, Coach, I'll tell you what, watching the replay, I was trying to find Michael as much as anything. Was Michael the one that seemed like he jumped up about 3 feet after that bucket was hit or not?
There were so many people jumping around, Joe. What a great finish. A game that looked like it was just going to slip away after Butler really had done a great job in that game without Rodney Clark. And what a great finish. I mean, that's what college basketball is all about. High school basketball. I got goosebumps from the call. You know, we got to keep that in our archive and use that. You know, Michael, we texted back and forth the next day and the next morning, and he was like, hey, you know, you guys are good for us. Every time he comes on before a big game, the Dogs find the victory. So we're 2 for 2, Joe, with the IU game and now with the Gonzaga game. Unfortunately, the Dogs stubbed their toe the other night at LaSalle and lost, won a one-point game against Gonzaga and then lost a one-point game at LaSalle. But, you know, sooner or later, you just can't win them all. And they played a good game on the road. And they're still, you know, trying to get Rodney Clark back healthy and ready to go. But what a great game. What a great finish. And what a great show we have today, Joe.
Well, I'll tell you what. I guess I can bill us as the Coach K and Joe Show, the official good luck charm of Butler basketball. That's what I think. But I'll tell you what.
We'll take it.
You know, as high as it looked like Michael got, the funny thing is to also watch Brad Stevens. He's the coolest, calmest person in the world. The guy hit the shot. He just turned to his left and went to shake the coach's hand. You know, that was kind of funny to watch too. But what an unbelievable moment. And just so happy for Michael and Coach Stevens and the rest of the team.
Well, I read an article, talked a little bit about the ending of that game and Coach Brad Stevens. And basically what it came down to is something that's really true. And you know, coaches will show emotion as we've seen over the years. But a lot of times you'll see coaches just move on. And it's as he said, you no longer are a fan in the game. Your focus is on the next possession, the possessions that are coming, and you just move forward. You don't have time to be a fan. And Brad Stevens, I thought he said, it was just great how he said it. He goes, I miss that. I miss not being able to be a fan once in a while in the game. Now, no one would have had any negative thing to say about him had he been a fan in that game at the end. But it's a nice win. It was a nice win for the Butler Bulldogs, and IU got him a win over Penn State the other night. And Joe, the Boilers played a pretty solid game against Michigan on the road, I believe, but couldn't quite come up with a victory.
Well, for 27 minutes they did, and you know, I think I'm going to have to write a blog putting my tail between my legs because, you know, Coach Painter's really done a lot with this team, and they've come a long way. And, you know, having freshmen, I guess that's part of it. You know, you have to live with the good and the bad. And, you know, some nights you see Ronnie Johnson out there and you think, God, that's just great. And then you then the next second he'll throw up a stupid shot, you know. And you know, Rafi Davis has really came on lately, and you know, the future's bright for that program. The future is bright for IU. The future's bright for Butler, and you know, in the state of Notre Dame, you know, and you know, the state of Indiana has just got some really good basketball teams right now.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see the progression of the teams that around the Big Ten and here in the state. You know, USI, Division II, outstanding Division II program down in Evansville, on the west side of Evansville, had a big game with their rival Western, or Kentucky Wesleyan the other night. Kentucky Wesleyan came in undefeated fourth ranked, and USI actually just handed it to them, kicked their butt, and it was a big, big win for the Screaming Eagles and allowed them to move up to the top of the conference standings. U of E's playing well, had a win the other night. The girls' team, which started out very slowly, has started to put together back-to-back-to-back wins, and I think a lot of that has to do with a player who wasn't eligible, and she's become eligible. We'll talk a little bit about her later on in the show. So a lot of good basketball around the state of Indiana. And as we get towards the end of January and into February, of course, Hoosier Hysteria is going to be right at the doorstep, knocking on the door.
Yeah, and, you know, on a high school level, just real quick, I forgot to do this last week. I'd like to do it this week. I'd like to congratulate former Jasper head basketball coach of the Lady Wildcats, Karen Bauer Steptonagel. She was elected into the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame, yet another Jasperite being elected in, and she'll be going in, you know, Alan Noss from Huntingburg, you know. So, you know, our area here is a hotbed of basketball, and it's great to see those people to be honored, you know, for their past accomplishments.
Well, Karen had a great high school career at Jasper and then in college at Ball State, I believe, and she did a great job while coaching the Wildcat program, really built it into a solid program during the time that she held the position. So we congratulate her, and a lot of good things. You know, even last week on the show, our Glory Days edition we had with Mike Ballinger had tremendous response from not only people in the local area around DuBois County, but here in the Evansville area. A couple people from Henderson, Kentucky, commented to me how they remember Mike when he went to the University of Kentucky in Western and wondered what he was doing now. He was an outstanding three-sport athlete and could have played anything he wanted to, and he chose basketball and University of Kentucky, and you can't blame him. But I thought what was great about the interview, Joe, is it put to rest some of the stories and question marks of his pro baseball. Did he have an opportunity? How much was offered? You know, I've heard things like, well, he was offered $100,000 and didn't go, and Mike humbly and openly put all that to rest, and what happened with football, and it was very interesting to hear about Lee Corso coming and talking to him and offering him an opportunity to go join the Hoosiers in football, even after he had gone and was playing basketball. So that was a great part of the show, I thought. And we'll be getting ready to bring our first guest on, folks. We'll be bringing on Pigs.com and Rivals.com lead man Mike Pegram. And we love having Mike Pegram on the show. And if you haven't been to Pigs.com, you need to go to that site. You need to join it. I mean, he's got just tremendous information on IU hoops and football and baseball. Anything going on with IU, he has. There's forums to talk about the Hoosiers. There's all kinds of insight on game day and post-game reaction by the coaches. Rivals.com, you get to find out about the top players that the Hoosiers are looking at. Top players, not just who the Hoosiers are looking at, but in the country. So if you get that opportunity, you might want to go to Pigs.com after the show and take a look at the site. And he's just got a tremendous pulse on what's going on with IU, as well as the Rivals.com portion. And, folks, if you want to know who's important out there as far as the recruiting aspects, whether it's the Hoosiers or just in the nation, Pigs.com is the place to go. So when we come back from our break, we'll be joined by Mike Pegram. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. That's IdeaFusionMedia.com.
Mr. Dorfman.
Hello.
0.2. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're joined by Pigs.com, Mike Pegram. If you haven't checked out Pigs.com, the leader in everything IU sport-wise, if you're an IU fan, that's the place to go. Mike, how you doing today?
Oh, fine, guys. Great to be here again.
Hey, Mike, this is Coach K, and we love having you on the show, and I want to reiterate to our listeners, they need to get to Pigs.com if they want to know about what's going on in Hoosier Nation. And also, you have a great information on the Rivals.com and the top players in the football and basketball around the nation for the coming years and as well as past year's information. So Pigs.com is the place to go and not only learn about but be able to talk about Hoosier basketball, football, baseball, and everything else. So it's a great website. Let me compliment you on it.
Well, I appreciate it, Coach. It's a love of life, labor of life, and it's been watching it grow has been great.
Well, it definitely is a labor and a love, as you said, and you've got to be committed to it, and your focus is unbelievable. Hey, Mike, let's start out and just maybe just a quick update on Hoosier football and recruits. And I know I've been on the Pigs.com site, and they brought some people in at different times and still looking at some people that are committed and not yet signed, but some pretty solid-looking talent looking to come play football at IU.
Yeah, they've had a couple scholarships open up here in the last moment and with some seniors not coming back. And so they're still looking to add a couple signees. We're only about a week away or so from signing day for the seniors in high school right now, so they're trying to finish off the class, and it's been a really good one, more four-star type prospects than we've seen Indiana get among the 19 that they've already got commitments from.
Well, when that signing day comes, and we know the different coaching staffs are working that, making sure that the people that are committed get those things signed. What's that day like for Mike Pegram and Pigs.com?
Well, you know, it used to be really crazy. You sit there and you wait for a word on letters of intent to be faxed in and for confirmations from Indiana about who is signed. But now with this social media and every kid that's letting you know through text and through their Twitter and their Facebook page, it's not quite as dramatic as it used to be, and the commitments come earlier and earlier. But there's always a kid or two, or there's always a little bit of drama coming down to the end, somebody who's been thinking about decommitting, and you just have to wait and see if they actually do sign on the dotted line. I tell you a story. Jerry DiNardo used to watch, make sure everybody from Assembly Hall would hang around and on commitment day or signing day. It was that serious to him that the whole athletic department was behind him on that day.
That's awesome.
I can remember.
You want to make sure nobody drops through the cracks.
No, it's you know, he came from the SEC where it's really serious, but yeah it's a big day for the program to get, and this year it's especially big because of the level of talent is up in Indiana, and Indiana's finally taking advantage of that.
Now, Mike, you said the level of Indiana, and Indiana does have a lot of high-profile recruits coming in. Where do you see them as far as ranked in as far as the Big Ten goes with this recruiting year? Of course, they're going to be a lot higher than they usually are, right?
Yeah, I don't know if they'll be in the upper half, but they'll be close to that middle range, which is really good for the program. I think it's the best class that they've had. It almost was a super class, but a couple of the Indy kids that they thought might have followed some of the Darius Lathams and the Antonio Allens and some of these other Indy kids that are really highly ranked didn't fall for them, but it's still one of the best classes, maybe the best class that we've seen since we've really followed recruiting close.
Mike, on the site you guys have the rivals.com and the recruiting rankings, and I noticed that it lists Notre Dame as number two. And again, people need to get to Pegs.com and take a look at everything that's there and join that site. But Notre Dame is number two with Florida number one. I've heard some people say that Notre Dame could eventually end up number one. Is the class at Notre Dame, from what you know, and I know your focus is on Indiana, but is this going to be the type of class that can put Notre Dame in a position in the next year or two to compete in that BCS championship game a little bit stronger than they did this year?
Yeah, the momentum that they've built from this year and the new staff has just slowly recruited the higher level kid that you remember Notre Dame getting in the past, and the momentum from Brian Kelly is really impressive, and now they're seeing it come to fruition with their signings, and they should be obviously there's still a little bit of a gap we found out in the championship game between Notre Dame and the SEC top teams, but they seem to be filling that with this class.
Much to the chagrin of Brian and to the shillelagh, Alabama's right behind him in the recruiting wars, so they're not going to drop off too much. And I see Ohio State's ranked high and Michigan. As far as what it looks like on paper, the top teams, the normal top teams in the Big Ten seem to be in position to keep that going as well.
Yeah, it's really hard to break into that. I mean, Ohio State is always going to be there because they have a lock on the state of Ohio. There is no other major school there. And with their tradition, they're just going to always be at the top. And there's so much talent up in Michigan, too, so for those two programs. And, the same few, but it's a matter of Indiana and Illinois and Purdue sometimes move up to the middle, and Iowa has done a terrific job with all of the local talent. And, if Indiana can maintain this level of recruiting, they'll slowly inch up there.
Hey, Mike, let's jump over a little bit on the hoop side now. And Indianapolis Tech has a pretty solid player up there. Trey Lyles, I believe, is there any kind of decision for him going forward? Is he leaning somewhere? What have you heard?
Well, I think we had Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski from Duke, up to watch him recently here in the last week. But most of the rumor or whatever about him is that he'll end up going to Kentucky. That was the first place I think they visited after he decommitted from Indiana. For a lot of kids that are ranked in the top 10, that's kind of the ticket to the NBA in their minds, and that's because of all the first-round picks that they've had over the last few years under John Calipari. That's what everyone is thinking, but, he has not come out and said that, and he really likes Duke and North Carolina as well, and we haven't seen Indiana at his games, the staff, maybe a little bit of hard feelings there, as it often happens when a kid is committed for a long time, comes and visits, and then decides to open it up. So it does look like a Kentucky or a Carolina or Duke, maybe a Florida, some of the others, the schools that you find perennially in the top of the rankings.
Can I ask you for, and I'm not holding you to anything, and I want our listeners to understand that, but But when you've seen a lot of players out there over the years and this year, when you look at him, how do you kind of assess his abilities and strengths?
Well, he's kind of unusual. He's a little bit more of a power forward body, but with a small forward game. You know, he's got the strength and the body to bang a little bit. He will play some back to the basket, but he really likes to play away from the basket because he's such a skilled player.
Mm-hmm.
Shoots the ball tremendously well and puts the ball on the floor pretty well and passes it. I think there's a incentive on his camp to play small forward in college, and you know, maybe that's one reason he decommitted from Indiana. You know, they don't at a Kentucky, maybe you always have a big center, shot blocking center, and so forth, and then maybe there's more ability for him to play the three spot because maybe a view that that's where his NBA future is at. But he is kind of a unique player. He has the size of a power forward, but one of the most skilled players we've ever seen. For someone, you know, 6'9" and strong, just a really pretty shot.
Well, I've heard nothing but good things about him, and I'm looking forward to getting up into Indianapolis area here soon and watch him play. I know Colin Hartman's back from his injuries with Cathedral, obviously an IU signee or recruit. Can you tell me, is he back full strength? Is he in a position to continue to build up his game before he comes to IU?
Yeah, he's had kind of some unrelated injuries that just you think he will get over here. He's a, you know, he's grown a little bit, 6'7" needs to get a lot stronger, so that may hold him back from being an immediate impact guy. But he's got a nice jumper, and Indiana probably has a little bit of a shooting void that he could fill pretty quickly if he works at his game hard. He's an underrated passer. He's not really a banger, so he may be more set for the small forward position, but a pretty skilled guy, put the ball on the floor a little bit. Just could be a really nice role player and guy who could hit the open jumper for Indiana.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with your assessment. I was able to see him play several times, and I would agree he doesn't appear at this stage to be a banger. He looks more like the small four. The guy's going to kick out, hit that perimeter shot for you, and is willing to give the ball up as well. Let's jump over to the Hoosiers, as most people want to hear about. You know, we're off to into the Big Ten. We've had what I call a little lull in seemed how we were progressing. We'll see what happens with Michigan State coming up. I want to ask you about the freshman outside of Yogi. I get a feeling, I'm kind of concerned that some of these freshmen outside of Yogi aren't sure of their role or aren't comfortable with the role or maybe aren't sure of it. What is your sense of the freshman, Hollowell, and these guys as far as Pereira? Do they understand their role or have they found themselves yet?
Well, I mean, I would say neither have. I'm specifically talking Jeremy Hollow and Hunter Mosquera Perea, but neither have had a real breakout game where they really get several baskets and kind of had the light bulb go on a little bit. In Hunter's case, he missed a lot of practice time with a foot injury that he had to rest, and then he couldn't play, so he didn't get any early game experience. And there's no doubt he has to get a lot better in catching the ball. And, you know, his hands are holding him back, I think, from finishing a lot of plays that are there. But he hasn't had a lot of experience to make the defensive switches to be where he has to be sometimes. But he plays hard, and he had a great block the other night and can rebound. It's going to take him some time to adjust and to work on his hands. In Jeremy's case, it's been a little bit befuddling because you can see his talent out there. He's got good size, he's got good skills, but he's not adjusted really well yet to the faster pace of this game at the next level here in Big Ten. Just seems to be a little bit out of sync, seems to rush his play, rush his shots, I think he will. You know, he looks a little bit more comfortable here in the last two games, and you know, it's important for maybe one of those two guys to come in because the depth of the team has suffered a little bit in the last few games as some of the guys have gone into slumps off the bench, and you know, it's important for them to get that depth so that they can run that fast pace the way that it's been so effective for them.
Yeah, it seems to me, Mike, and you know, I'm just watching the games, and everybody has their own take. You're more in depth with it, being around him and talking with him. It just seems like Jeremy seems to find himself floating out on the perimeter more. And as a coach, I kind of look and say, here's this young guy, has a wealth of talent, wealth of ability. Maybe find him some easy things underneath, get him to where he gets in a little bit of flow, and maybe work his way from inside to the outside. But I find him drifting out on the perimeter and trying to do some things out there that maybe the game might be just a little bit ahead of him right now, and maybe starting him down, getting him inside and having him find some work down there and find some easy things might benefit him mentally and emotionally in the game as much as physically.
Yeah, and he has a really nice post-up game. We saw it at Lawrence Central all the time. We saw it in the summers where he's one of the better players you see at that size to go back to the basket. You know, it has to be the right matchup because the size is tremendous in the Big Ten. But, you know, maybe that's where he can start to gain some confidence. You know, he is a good shooter, but he has a little bit of a launched shot, and it's not a pure shot as some guys. So it has been a little bit of an adjustment for him to find the range, but he's been stubborn about looking for that perimeter shot, maybe instead of going inside like you're talking about and kind of working back from there.
I've got a text question here from Brian in Bedford, and he's asking, do you think Sheehy needs to mentally expand his game a little bit more for the Hoosiers as far as maybe not looking to shoot first, but maybe get more involved in the offense and ball movement? Thoughts on that, Mike?
Well, you know, he may take one or two jumpers that are a little bit too quick on the trigger, but he's the sixth man on this team. He can score. He did the other night. You know, I think that's his role, to come in and provide some energy and offense. So I don't think that's a big deal that he may, you know, occasionally take a quick shot, you know, a questionable shot. He's needed to provide offense. He's athletic. He can drive. He's shown that he's expanded his range. You know, I think it's just a matter of him getting a little more comfortable. And he did that Wednesday night after it going through a little bit of a slump.
Okay. Well, Brian, there you have it. And I do think that he comes in to give the Hoosiers a little bit of a shot in the arm offensively and get some points. So, Mike, one last thing before we let you go. I know you got a busy day ahead of you, but Michigan State coming up, the Hoosiers, you've got the physical play of the Tom Izzo team banging the boards, wants to beat on you a little bit, cause you problems there. You've got the Hoosiers' athletic ability. Hopefully we'll get the ball moving. I know Coach Crean tweeted earlier this morning, hopes the guys will not fall into the trap of the dribble drive. And I agree. I think the Hoosiers need to move that basketball, get those skip passes, and get Michigan State off that set position of being able to just stand there and physically beat around. Your quick thoughts on the Michigan State matchup?
Well, it's a tough one for Indiana with those big athletic guards or at the 2 and 3 spots with Dawson and Gary Harris. And Appling's a big point relatively, so it's a tough matchup because Indiana throws out, you know, two guards in the 5'11" area. You know, one of them has to guard, you know, Harris or Dawson, and so it'll be interesting. And Michigan State will run up and down the floor a little bit with them, which, you know, maybe what Indiana wants. But the strengths of their front line, with Nix and Payne playing well of late, is going to be tough, you know, especially for Christian Watford, who's, you know, kind of a 6'7", 6'8"-ish, and not quite as a banger as those two guys.
Well, I think it's going to be a great opportunity to see where the Hoosiers are at in the Big Ten, playing a solid team, a team that's going to stretch them a little bit. But, you know, IU has some athletic ability and a little depth, and hopefully that they'll be able to use that to their advantage. Mike, it was great having you again, and I'm telling our listeners, get to Pigs.com. So much information on the Hoosiers, Rivals.com, the top players in the country. You guys just do a great job.
Coach, I appreciate having me back.
We'll make sure to get you again, and thanks for being with us this morning. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Appreciate it.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
I want a hamburger. No, a cheeseburger. I want a hot dog. I want a milkshake. I want potatoes.
You'll get nothing and like it.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're trying to get our next guest connected, Coach Pat Blake out of Chipola Community College down in Mariana, Florida, and his team is 12th ranked in NJCAA, and we're just looking to get him. He's getting ready to call in. So his team 20-2. It's Patrick's first season as a head coach, and we'll get him on the line just presently and get him on the show.
Well, hey, Coach, I'll tell you what. I also got to thinking. You know what we need to do real soon is, Mitch Stetter has a new team, the California Angels. Los Angeles Angels, what's their name these days? And he's going to be heading to spring training real soon. And we haven't had him on since he's made the jump to the Angels, and we really need to try maybe next week to switch gears a little bit and talk a little baseball. What do you think?
Well, baseball's right around the corner, Joe, and you know, we still haven't heard what our good friend Scott Rowland's going to do. You know, recently the Internet news, and you have to believe everything on the Internet, right? Was saying that the Dodgers were quite interested in Scott Rowland. They have a lot of pieces to the puzzle in L.A., but they don't have a third baseman, a solid third baseman. And you know, my feeling is I looked at the situation with the Dodgers, a guy like Scott Rowland could be very, very positive to that group of players. They seem like they have a lot of talent, but they're kind of scattered a little bit. And maybe a third baseman with some leadership skills in the clubhouse, as Scott would have, could come in and help that club. I know Mattingly's hoping to get an option picked up on his contract. I'm not sure that's been done yet with the new ownership group. But, you know, you've got magic involved out there, and I'm sure that the from a competitive standpoint, that ownership group has the people in place. Now you got to make good decisions, and I think they also are getting ready to agree with Fox. I think it was Fox.
Yep.
On a $7 to $8 billion contract, TV contract. So that's a lot of money in the Dodgers' pocket, and they will have the highest payroll in baseball, which vaults them ahead of the Yankees and the Red Sox. I know the Yankees have seemed to kind of cut back a little bit on their payroll. So we'll see what happens. You know, we'll have Scott, and hopefully when he makes his decision, we'll have Scott rolling back on the show. So let's get ready to have our next guest. I'm pretty excited to have the coach of Chipola Community College, Junior College down in Mariana, Florida. His first year as a head coach, team started out 18-0. They are, I believe, currently 20-2 with a big game coming up this weekend. 12th ranked in the polls. Coach Pat Blake to our show. Pat, good to have you.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me. Excited to be on.
Well, Coach, we're excited to have you. And just so our listeners, and we have listeners here in the Indiana, Kentucky, tri-state area, but we also have listeners from around the country because we're internet, so it's easy to do. But just to get a little bit background of how I know you, Pat, you're the son of a very well-known local sportscaster, Mike Blake. You played, went to school here in Evansville at Memorial High School. You were an outstanding athlete, basketball, football, I think even a little baseball. A great competitor, hard-nosed. You went on to college and went down to U of L and basically mentored under Rick Pitino. So you've got all the little pieces, and you've earned your way into the position. And just talk a little bit about what it was like getting that position. You're a young man. How you felt when you were tabbed as the head coach at Chipola?
Well, you know, just to kind of go back, you know, I think an outstanding athlete might be a little loose term there. I don't know if I was outstanding, but tried to work hard at Memorial and was very fortunate to get on at U of L as a manager and learn under Coach Pitino. And when I was given the opportunity to be the head coach at Chipola College, it was, you know, it was very exciting. It's when I decided to get into coaching, you always have that goal of being the head man. I didn't know if it would. I never dreamed it would happen at the junior college level, and mm-hmm. I never dreamed that I would be a head coach at this young of an age. But my time spent here as an assistant and the years here and the opportunity I knew that was given to me, I was really excited and really ready for the challenge.
Well, I believe you prepared yourself well. And, you know, there's a lot of times people think that you learn it all from playing, but going the route you went to work under Coach Pitino and his staff and just the different ways they approach the game, as a manager and being around that, you pick up so much where you're not just focused on playing, but you can watch how the system works, how they prepare on the court and off the court. Then you went on and was it Mississippi State or Mississippi that you went to?
Mississippi, Ole Miss.
Yeah, Mississippi. You had a chance to work in that program. And then, as you said, you weren't sure or didn't think about junior college, but all of a sudden you get this great opportunity, and really you're ready for it from a basketball standpoint. You just have to be ready for it mentally and emotionally, and it appears that you have been with the success that you had. Take us back to the start of the year, though. I don't know if the team was in place, if you had to go out and recruit yet. What was the early stages of that head coaching position like for you?
Well, when I took over, we had, you know, six guys that were capable of returning. You know, at a junior mm-hmm. college, you have a lot of turnover every year. You have 13 scholarships. Or I'm sorry, we have 12 scholarships a year. And, you know, you can only have kids for 2 years at the most. And it's a, you know, freshman, sophomore, and then they graduate, and then they go on to a four-year university. So I had at least six scholarships to fill, and for various reasons, we had a few guys that were not going to come back and join us. Mm-hmm. So I had to go out and sign eight guys. And it's a very long process because the type of tradition that we have here at Chipola and the type of success that they're used to, You get some of the best junior college players in the country, but the thing is some of the best kids that have to go junior college are the ones that are trying really hard to still get qualified for the Division One,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. You know, like we signed Sam Cassell Jr., who's the son of the NBA player Sam Cassell. Well, he was at the University of Maryland until the second week of September, until the NCAA finally decided on his case that he was ineligible. So then mm-hmm. he came to our place, and he's actually sitting out this year, and he'll play for us next year. But the recruiting process, it's a very unique one. It's not really similar to Division I in the fact that in Division One, you may recruit a kid from eighth grade, freshman, sophomore year. You really develop that relationship to where in junior college, it's a lot quicker process. It's something that maybe happens over a shorter span of time. And that was really my main thing taking over, was trying to fill a roster, but then also set in place some things that I wanted to change and do different with the program.
Now, when you came in, did you have some holdovers from the staff? How large is your staff? Did you have to assemble some people to help you as far as the staff and then get out recruiting? What was that part of the job like as you took the position?
Well, I had one assistant that was a holdover. He would eventually end up getting another job halfway through the summer. So I had to hire three new assistants, you know, two that are full-time and one that's part-time. And, again, that was, you know, it took about 2 weeks to finally assemble that, because it's a sacrifice to come to junior college. Obviously, the money is not as glamorous as it is in the Division I level, but it's, you know, it's a profession where, you know, you get a lot of young, hungry coaches that know what it takes. They know that the time and the effort they have to put in, and they come in with the attitude that if I pay my dues now at this level and with these opportunities that I'm given, then it's going to pay off in the long run.
So you're multitasking, basically. You're trying to put a staff together. You're trying to recruit. You're trying to look at who's a possible player that's going to fall off a roster or a recruiting roster and end up at the junior college level. I would assume that the people you'd met over your time, the networking becomes very important to find out who those players might be and their ability, and then whether they're going to qualify or not qualify.
Oh, absolutely. You know, some of the best players we have on our team is through relationships that I've formed if it was Louisville or Ole Miss, or just when you go to a Final Four, you spark up a conversation with a coach and you keep in touch. And, you know, as many professions are, many businesses, it's all about the relationships you have and the relationships you form. And that's definitely been one of the, you know, most important factors in recruiting. And I feel like it will continue to be that.
Yeah, Coach, I got to give you a lot of credit from the standpoint, and for our listeners, people who want to understand how the coaching process works, it really is the relationships you build going to those Final Fours and working throughout the year and on the recruiting trail and going to the AAU tournaments as you're meeting more assistants and potential assistants and head coaches and potential head coaches. It's really not a place for egos to form walls, but the understanding that at some point you could be a part of his staff or he could be a part of yours or he could help you get on somewhere else, or like has worked for you, you end up in a job you never thought you'd be in, and now you can call on some great relationships to find outstanding players to help you where you're at this point.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I learned it very, very quickly at Louisville. And it's, you know, it's a mindset that, you know, these assistant coaches or coaches, it's all about guys that are, you know, that don't have an ego, that are just willing to do whatever it takes to get the job done. And if it was folding laundry, if it was, you know, filling out just, you know, a call log or just doing a monthly schedule, just the small tedious things that help make their lives easier, that's more attractive, you know, than, you know, if you're a funny guy or, you know, if you're a fun guy to hang out with. It's more about your work ethic. You're willing to, you know, swallow your pride and do whatever necessary to get the job done and make the program better.
Yeah, and so many coaches, they watch that, they see that, and the opinions are formed, and you find out who wants to put forth the effort. And even though it is what you just said, making sure the laundry gets done and it's back where it's supposed to be, the tapes are and DVDs are finished up, the scouting tapes are taken care of, those are the little things that they watch and see, yeah, this is the kind of guy that I want to have as a part of my staff, because he can get things done. And I think it's just so interesting. You're someplace you didn't think you were going to be. You probably were looking into jobs other places. They didn't work out, or you didn't have time to wait. You take this junior, and I call it a great job because it gives you head coaching experience. It lets you use the relationships you created and nurtured on the Division I level. You get to work with some outstanding basketball players. You get to work great against great competition, but all of a sudden you're there, and you're in Florida, which is a great place to be, and you're 18-0 at one point.
Right.
What are you thinking? You got the sunshine of Florida, and you're 18-0. Are you wondering, is this how it's always going to be?
Well, I think I made the comment. It was after we had a terrible practice, and I was miserable. And I was like,
yeah,
we're 18-0. We just got ranked the number one team in the country, and I'm miserable. I was like, I don't want to think about how I'm going to be when I'm, 10-8 or, 12-6. And but that's just kind of the part of coaching. You can't get caught up in the record. Every day presents a new challenge. You're only as good as your last game, and that's what keeps it fresh. That's what keeps it exciting. But was very fortunate to, have a great start. And even though we've got into conference play, and we do play in the toughest conference in the country, in my opinion, and it's a war every night. And, we're 3-2 in conference with a very tough one coming up this Saturday. But for me, that's the level, I want to compete at. You want to compete at the highest level. You want to go up against the best teams in the country and have a chance where, if you play your best, you're going to win. But if not, then unfortunately you're going to come on the losing side of things.
And really, Coach, you want to do that because that makes your program more attractive to potential recruits who may have fallen short of their goal to get on the Division I level. They're a little down in the dumps, and here you come in and say, this is what we've got. We're in Florida. We play a great conference, maybe the best in the country. We're ranked. We play great competition. You've got great teammates to play with. All those things come together to create a nice package that attracts those recruits and puts you in a position to be successful.
Oh, absolutely. And it's the thing I tell, because at the junior college level, in my opinion, it's all about the players. It's all about getting them here, getting their academics in line, and getting them prepared for their four-year school. And at the end of the day, we want to win championships. We want to win the conference. But I think our responsibility as a junior college head coach is to take these kids that weren't able to qualify for Division I and make sure that academically they get to where they need to be, and socially or whatever the issues may be that led them to our program, but get them on the right track so then they're able to contribute at a four-year school. And that was another one of my focus when I got the job. And, this past fall we had a 3.06 team GPA, which was one of the highest in school history. So more so than the 18-0 record, being able to have our kids do that well in the classroom was one of the things I was most proud of.
Well, I can tell you that's exciting that you shared that with us. And for parents of sons that would come there and play, that's important too, because, as much as that we dream about, I'm going to have a great college career and I'm going to go on to the NBA, the majority are not going to go on to the NBA. The majority need to get a good college degree and be in a position to go out there and be successful in life. And to know that about your program, as I said, we have listeners from all over the country, and you recruit all over the country. And I think that's a great positive about your program. Can you tell our listeners just a little bit, share with us a little bit about your recruiting base, how far out you go? I think you might even have an international player. So tell us a little bit about the recruiting and how far it goes and what you're looking for.
Well, it's definitely all over the country. And, we do have two international kids. We have a 6'11 center from Nigeria who had originally signed with North Carolina State. He played for us last year. Unfortunately, he's been injured all year, so he hasn't played this year. But very talented player. Then we have another 6'4 point guard out of Venezuela, who was a freshman, and he's still a little raw. He's not yet ready to contribute, but you know we'll be very good for us next year. And then it really is, we recruit all across the country. We've had kids from New York, we have a kid from Colorado, North Carolina, Milwaukee, New Jersey, Illinois, St. Louis. It really is just, it's nowadays with these AAU tournaments, you can go to Peach Jam in Atlanta and you can see teams from all across the country, and you form those relationships with, sometimes it's a Division I coach who has recruited this player and realizes he's not going to be qualified for Division I, so he helps you out, or it's your relationship with a high school or an AAU coach, and they know that most importantly you're going to make sure that this kid gets his academics in order, so he helps you out. Or just sometimes you just introduce yourself to the parents, and you know, like a kid that we recruited from St. Louis that's on our roster now, you know, over Christmas break last year, I would go up and, you know, see him and his family, and you form a relationship like that. What I think is probably the most beneficial thing for myself and coaches that do come to this level is that you do have to wear so many hats. You do have to have your hands in academics, and you have to learn that side of it. But then you also have to be on the recruiting side, where you have to form relationships, because that's the only way to get your recruiting where it needs to be. But then you get on the floor to coach, develop these players on and off the floor as young men. And it really kind of develops you into hopefully a complete coach that will be able to carry that on to the next level, so that you can be beneficial as an assistant.
Oh, I would think that this is a great opportunity for you, and you know, if you want to spend your career at Chipotle, that's great. But otherwise, you've got your feet wet in so many areas that I would believe that you would be someone that a program will be looking for, both on the staff or even to lead, because now you know what it's like to lead a program. I know that as you move up in the Division I, some are bigger than others, but you know there are some Division I programs that you can go into and use your expertise and your connections to make a big difference. How big is Chipola Community College?
It's the smallest school in our conference. We're in a small town, Marianna, Florida, which for you know the travelers that come down south to, you know, Destin or Panama City for spring break, you actually drive right by the city. It's a small city of about 12,000, and the community college has a little over 3,000 students.
Oh, great. And are you close to Tallahassee?
Yes, we are an hour west of Tallahassee, about an hour north of Panama City, and, you know, an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes away from Destin. So it's right there in the middle. It's secluded enough to where our players are just able to focus on basketball and school during the week. And when we have off days, it's close enough to where they can go to the beach.
Well, it sounds like a great setup for a young man who wants to come down and continue his basketball career and put himself in a position to step in the Division I level. Coach, before we let you go, real quickly, you got a big game coming up this weekend. Can you give us a couple ideas and thoughts about what it's going to take, who you got, and what you got to do to get the victory?
Right. Well, we play Northwest Florida State, and the last couple of years, this has been our biggest rival. And last year, Steve Forbes, who was an assistant coach with Bruce Pearl at Tennessee, when their staff was let go, he ended up taking the head coach at this junior college. And when he came, he brought their top recruit, Chris Jones, who's a guard out of Memphis. And Chris Jones is now signed to play at the University of Louisville next year. And so he leads the way for the Raiders. And last year, Chris Jones, as a freshman, took his team to the national championship game. He's considered the best player in the country this year, and he's as good as advertised. And he'll be a great player for Coach Pitino next year, and will really fit their style of play. But unfortunately, they have a few other players besides Chris, which makes them so difficult to defend and guard. But we played them 2 weeks ago at their place, and we were number one in the country. They were, I think, number six or seventh. And, you know, our guys were just a little overwhelmed by the moment. We started out down 14-2 with 10 minutes to go in the half, and I thought we did a great job defensively. We guarded them how we wanted to. But when you turn the ball over seven out of your first eight possessions, it's kind of tough to put some points on the board.
Oh,
and probably our biggest – we're just as talented, if not more talented, than any team in the country. We struggle with having maybe a true point guard that can get us set up in a half-court set sometimes and get us the shot that we need. And it's something that we kind of knew going in, but, you know, we have great size and athleticism. We have guys that can handle it at the guard positions. Just when it's in a half-court setting and when guys are really physical, it kind of takes us out of our game. And, you know, since then we've started pressing 40 minutes. We've really sped up the tempo, got it up pace, because that's where our strengths are. And, you know, we still work to continue to get better at our weakness and execute in the half court and make the plays that we need to make and make the extra passes. But, you know, we're all about creating offense through our defense, getting points off turnovers, and then trying to play an up-and-down game. And that's what we're going to do Saturday. You know, we play about nine guys. We have great depth and great quality in those nine guys. And we're going to try to slow down Chris Jones as much as you can, if possible. He's a great player, and they have some really good posts. And hopefully we'll have a great crowd that will give us that extra boost needed to come away with the win.
Well, it sounds like you've got them ready and, creating offense with your defense. I love that philosophy and something I believe in. So, Coach, good luck this weekend. You're doing a great job. First year head coach at Chipola, 20-2, 12th ranked, I believe, in the latest rankings. We are excited for you, and we are happy to have you today.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for everything.
We'll get back with you at some point later in the season. We're going to go to our break, and remember, you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Are you in the market for a new fence? Look no further than the Willis Fence Company. Willis Fence Company offers wood fences, chain link fences, aluminum and iron fences, and polyvinyl fences. Give fence professional Joe a call at 630-2449 for a free estimate today. The Willis Fence Company, a fence for every taste and budget.
Hey, I just want to say to all you other drivers out there, if you smell a delicious, crispy smell after the race, it's not your tailpipe. It's a little bit of shake and then bake. Shake and bake. That's what you say.
Get used to hearing it.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. This is Joe Milligan, joined by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schulteis. And we're also joined by Bill Somm, our Indy football correspondent, but also worked for the NCAA. And we've had many, many discussions about different things about the NCAA. So we've got Bill on to maybe try to help us explain these things. Bill, how are you doing today?
Great, Joe. How are you doing?
Doing great.
Hey, Bill. Coach K here. We're shaking and baking with Bill Somm today. And, Bill, it's been a few weeks since we've had you, and I've got to tell you, I've missed you.
It's good. It's good to hear your voice, Coach. It really is. And I've been following the show, and I know it's been growing, and you had great guests. So congratulations to both of you.
Well, I know that now that you and I can talk today, I'll sleep a little bit more comfortable tonight, and you'll be a little more at ease because our bro romance has been reunited since you're back on the show.
Indeed.
Hey, let's talk a little bit You know, we kind of didn't really get a great wrap up on the IHSA football season. I mean, we talked a little bit, and then we got in the playoffs, and then, you know, we had a Mr. Football that was chosen. And your thoughts about the Mr. Football?
Well, I think it was an excellent choice. Obviously, he's a great, great, great football player, and we're talking about Jalen Smith out of Bishop Lurs. He he's an outside linebacker, running back, but he's going to Notre Dame. He's 6'3", 6'3½", 225 pounds. He's just an outstanding football player, and from the people that know him, they pass the word on that he's also a great person. He's the number one outside linebacker in the country, ranked in most recruiting polls. So I think at the end of the day, it was the right choice.
So you really feel good about his ability to go into Notre Dame and be successful on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, I think what he has I think what you saw in the Alabama game and all your listeners saw in the Alabama game is that Notre Dame needs more speed and they need more size, and that's what they're going to get out of this kid Smith from Bishop Lurs, because he's a great, great, great tailback. You know, if he went to almost any other college in the nation, he'd probably start a tailback. But he has tailback speed at the outside linebacker position. So they're going to be able to, you know, he's going to be able to drop and run with backs out of the backfield. He'll be able to run with wide receivers, and he'll be able to blitz off the corner. So I think he's going to have a great career at Notre Dame.
Well, Bill, you know football much better than I do. I mean, you've got a great background in it from your coaching days, and you're an Ohio boy, and everybody in Ohio knows their football. You know, that championship game, it was very, very clear that with the 3 weeks or so to rest up their players and get prepared, not so much the game plan as just the sheer athletic ability, quickness, strength, that rest really was a big advantage to Alabama.
Well, I think the rest was good for them. The extra coaching was good for them. But I'm not a Notre Dame hater. I really enjoy watching Notre Dame play, know some of those players. But I got to tell you, just watching that football game on TV, it was men against the boys. And as good as Notre Dame is and as wonderful a season as they are, I think a lot of us kind of drank the Kool-Aid, you know, going into late November and through the month of December. And you go back and look at that schedule, you know, they hardly beat Pitt, and they hardly beat Stanford, and they did beat Wake Forest, and you know, they had just a magical season. But Notre Dame and Alabama are two different football programs in two different places right now.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think the luck of the Irish is really goes for this season as far as key wins at the right time, some games in which people were looking to maybe see them fall, and they ended up playing well. Everything just kind of fell in place to vault them into that BCS National Championship game. I like Notre Dame, and I'm happy about that, because now they got a taste of it. Now they know what it takes to get back there and be successful. That coaching staff has to get out there and get those recruits. I know they're going to have supposedly on paper one of the top recruiting groups in the nation this year, but I think Alabama's right there with them, too.
Well, yes, everybody just keeps marching forward. But as you guys know, February 6th is the signing date, and from everything the experts are saying is that Notre Dame will probably fall into that top five category of recruiting signees. So, they're well on their way. It was just a great year for them. And at least where I come from, all is right in college football when you're talking about a good, good Notre Dame football team. So, but you know, things change next year too. Ohio State may be the number one or number two team in the nation next year. And, you know, they didn't even get to compete this year. So the landscape changes, but just by a new entry into the whole mix. But Notre Dame is very, very good. I frankly think they still have to figure out that quarterback situation and figure out what kind of offense they want to run day in and day out. But they're very good.
Yeah, I agree, Bill. And you know, something will be interesting to me before we start really talking about the recruiting signing period on football, and just get your thoughts on some of those players out of the Indy area. But, you know, it'll be interesting for me, knowing where Urban Meyer came from, where he's at, and seeing how he brings some of that SEC speed, quickness, and into the Big Ten, and melts that together with the smash mouth of football. I'm really interested to see if he can be a guy that kind of changes the landscape of Big Ten football going forward, as far as expanding its ability in the, as athletes and quickness and speed. Any thoughts on that?
Well, Kenny, I think that's an interesting observation on your part, and I would suggest to you that Urban has already changed the landscape in the Big Ten, and he did it, frankly, about 10 months ago when all the other Big Ten coaches were complaining about his recruiting methods. They were not saying that Urban cheated, but the bottom line, in my words, not theirs, that he was just aggressive as a Dickens, you know, and he's already changed the landscape in the Big Ten. I think he recruits very aggressively. I think he doesn't take no for an answer. I think he's recruiting the South. He obviously is going to recruit Ohio just because that's kind of the Bible, and you have to recruit the homegrown kids at Ohio State. But he has changed the landscape, and he will continue to do that. And I'll tell you another message, at least I interpreted. If you go back to the Nebraska game, and I don't have the score, and I'm sure Joe could probably pull it up in 1 second, but they drilled Nebraska. And they were still scoring with like 2 minutes to go. And if I recollect correctly, they scored in the 50s or 60 points. And, you know, Big Ten used to be kind of a gentleman's conference, you know, with, you know, go back to all the coaches. Even when Woody and Bo were there, they, as much anger as they liked to play against each other, they were gentlemen. And when Urban drilled Nebraska at home, because Nebraska's coach is from Ohio, that just sent another message. So I think the change has been made, and I think that you're going to see an uptick in football in the Big Ten just to keep up with Urban Meyer and the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Well, it's going to be interesting. You know, you need people to come in and push that envelope a little bit and expand the game itself and their teams and how they play, and I think he's going to do that. Let's jump into the high school signing day coming up. Give us a little insight on some kids out of the Indianapolis area, maybe a surprise out there, or maybe we might not be surprised, just some key people and where they're going and your thoughts.
Well, a couple observations, Coach K, and neither are probably a surprise. One is probably a little negative, and one is probably pretty much of a positive. The observation is that I think if you're an Indiana Hoosier football enthusiast, that you agree you have to at least take some kids from Indiana. And with that being the case, I think you ought to be really, really happy. They've really got some commits from some really, really good football players. They've got a commit from the safety of Ben Davis, Antonio Allen, who's the 23rd best safety in the country, the fourth best player in Indiana. They've also got a commitment from Darius Latham from North Central. He's a defensive tackle. He's 6'5", 285. I don't think they have a defensive lineman on the roster right now that size. He's the 24th best defensive tackle in the nation. He's the fourth best player, or the fifth best player in Indiana. They also have a commitment from David Kenny out of Pike High School, a defensive end, 6'2", 255. Very, very, very quick. And he is the 33rd best defensive end in the country. So there's three IU kids right out of the Indianapolis area. They're also taking a kid out of Brownsburg, another safety, and he's 6'2". He runs a 4.5, Chase Dury, and he's very good. And then they also have a commitment of a wide receiver. Now, this kid's out of Fort Wayne, out of Homestead High School, but he's 6'1", 180. And he's the 139th best wide receiver in the country. So I think if you're a Hoosier, I think that you're saying, okay, we got to take some kids out of Indiana, but you know what? We didn't take Mid-American Conference type kids this time around. We've kind of set planted the seed, and we've taken the best players out of Indiana. The other observation, the negative is, and I think it's because of the transition, but you just don't see Purdue anywhere right now out of about the top 40 kids, I've only been able to find one committed to Purdue, and that's a quarterback out of Terre Haute South, and he was committed to the previous staff. That's not surprising. I think that staff's going to do very well, Purdue. But this year, it's been somewhat of a lost recruiting year.
Yeah, speaking Purdue, that's I'm the Purdue part of this show. Listening to Coach Hazel, I do think that he said that he's going to, whereas Coach Hope just kind of ignored the Midwest pretty well. I think Coach Hazel's made it clear that the Midwest, and particularly Indiana, the better kids in Indiana, are going to become a focal point of Purdue recruiting. But there is a guy I wanted to ask you about, see what you know about him. He's choosing right now between Purdue and Miami of Florida is Nate Wozniak out of Center Grove. Real tall, 6'9", is he, tight end?
Yeah, he's a tight end. He's 6'9". I think he's like 285. And he is just big as a house. And you're right, he has not committed yet. And I saw the young man play on one occasion. I think he's, and I say this respectfully, I think he's a bit of a project. Certainly, I don't think you walk away from a kid who's 6'9 and that big, because maybe you can turn him into something else if he's not quite your tight end. But, yeah, he could play football. I don't think he'd come in and play right away, but certainly somebody that can be very intriguing to work with over the course of time. I have a lot of confidence in that Purdue coach. You know, he coached at, obviously he was the head coach at Kent State and had immediate success, but he spent some years on that Ohio State staff. So the good news about recruiting the Midwest is that he's very familiar with Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, and obviously Indiana. So that's gonna work out just fine for them, I think.
Hey, Bill, just one last thing. Is there any on the high school recruiting, before we move to a couple other things with you, is there any surprise out there possibility where somebody changes at the last second? Are you hearing anything about anybody that might be looking to flop?
Well, I don't have a specific name for you, but I can promise you that there's going to be one or two flips on signing date. There always is. That's consistent with the process. It's consistent with just this recruiting going on forever. You know, I don't think these top kids are going to flip. You know, Smith will go to Notre Dame. The second best player, Tim Kimbrough, in the state is at Warren Central, and he's gone to Georgia, and he said that since day one. The third best kid is a kid out of Avon, Elijah Daniel. He's going to go to Ole Miss. And when you say surprise, I think an outsider might think, well, that's surprising, but it really isn't, because if you do your research, Elijah grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, and he's a Southern kid. So it kind of makes sense that he may have some interest in the SEC. Other than that, other than just the, quote, regular surprise of a kid flipping here and there, you know, we have the tight end out of Center Grove, who is not committed. We have a middle linebacker named Michael Hicks out of Concordia Lutheran, who has not committed yet, and Indiana and Illinois, Bowling Green and Ball State are in on him. And then there's another kid at Bishop Lurs, who Indiana and Purdue are in. He's a cornerback, and he's a top 15 kid in Indiana. So we're still waiting for a couple kids to commit.
Is there anybody out there in that you know of, or if I have thoughts on, that probably is being overlooked, that somebody in a lower Division II or Division III program is going to end up, or lower Division I's going to, Double A is going to end up with a player that maybe got overlooked?
Well, you know, those are fun conversations to get into, and you know, there's these quote prototype kids they're looking for now at these Division I schools. I frankly think people are overlooking Colin Sandor, at Cathedral High School, but, you know, he doesn't fit the prototype. You know, Colin is only 6'2", 270. If he was 6'3", 270, he'd be at a Mid-American Conference school or maybe even IU. So I think he's being a bit overlooked. However, you know, personally, he gets to go to Air Force, play football, and have a great career. I also wonder at times if there's a kid at Southport who has committed to Louisville. He is a big old offensive lineman. He's about 6'6". Obviously Louisville is a great program, but I just fascinated at Purdue, Iowa, Illinois, so on, you know, schools that are trying to get back weren't in on him. But those are the two names that come to mind. The quarterback at Cathedral, Connor Rice, I think, is vacillating between Division II and Division III, and I definitely think he's a Division II type kid. But those are my thoughts on that.
Yeah, and we might remind our listeners that, you know, those guys that don't quite reach the Division I level, there's some good football programs around this country, and there's a couple right there in Indianapolis, University of Indianapolis and Marion University. They got good football and good facilities and good support going on in that Indianapolis area right now.
There is there's very good football. I would say Marion College, for your listeners that follow the NAIA, won the national championship about 4 weeks ago. So that is just an outstanding tradition to keep going. University of Indianapolis actually made the playoffs this year in Division II, so that was just outstanding. And there is there's really good small college football play in Indiana when you throw in Wabash and even, you know, Earlham has made a run, Taylor has made a run, St. Francis has made a run up to Fort Wayne. So, yeah, there's some great football in Indiana.
Yeah, and I would tell the young guys, the possible kids, players wanting to move on the college level, hey, you know, Division I, you want to get there, 1AA, all that stuff, but there's some great football played on the 2 and the 3 level, the NAIA. The small college football in Ohio is unbelievable. You can compete at a high level even in these small colleges, so don't give up on your dream or your hope. There's a lot of opportunity out there.
Well, that's exactly right. And just for mom and dad, when you're talking NAIA and you're talking NCAA Division II, you're still talking about money. So
yeah.
You can balance the budget a little bit at those institutions. And Division III, obviously, you have to pay your own way. But there's plenty of football and there's plenty of opportunities out there.
Yeah, and if a mom and dad are listening and they got a question on any of those schools, hey, Facebook us at Coach K and Joe Show, or text us or tweet us at Coach K and Joe, and you know we'll get it in the hands of our indie guy Bill Somm, and he'll give you some response on some of those colleges. As I said, he's an Ohio boy, so he knows a lot about those colleges as well over there. Bill, we're going to switch gears on you, and you know we're not asking you to talk about anything you don't want to talk about. We know that you're just giving your thoughts and ideas and how maybe it was looked at, but you are a former senior official with the NCAA, and from time to time we talk about the NCAA, and we have ideas and thoughts, and we get questions about the NCAA. So we're just going to ask you some open-ended questions. If you want to give us some responses, you can. If you don't, you can say, well, that's not really anything I can comment on, but I know – Joe, our other part of the show. Joe, you are there, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
I know you've got a question for Bill, so put your NCAA cap on, Bill, or shirt, or hand, or clench fist, whatever you want to do, and Joe, run your first question by him, and I know I've got a couple for him as well.
Okay, you know, Bill, my daughter Ryan played college sports on the Division I level, and you know, it was a 4-year ride. As a lot of people don't realize, it's renewed annually each year.
Sure.
But, you know, the understanding basically is with her was just, you know, as long as the girl stays in good standing and works hard, you know, it isn't a job where you're fired because of your how good you are or aren't. And so this goes into my question. With the oversignings, how does that exactly work? IU is 3 oversigned right now. Now, are they allowed to give reasons why they can be? Or I guess what I'm saying is, you know, someone like Colin Hartman, you know, is it fair to someone like that to be thinking, wait a minute here, the numbers don't add up. Am I the odd man out? Because personally, between you and I think that's kind of slimy recruiting. And your opinion on the oversigning, how that's supposed to work.
Sure, Joe. Those are good points. The first thing I would tell you that just in the last year, the NCAA has adopted a new rule that says that institutions can now offer a 4-year scholarship. Now, that's not a rule that they have to make that offer, but for your listeners out there that actually have young people being recruited, they need to ask that the coach, are you offering me a 1-year scholarship to be renewed, or are you offering me a 4-year scholarship? And that just kind of moves from coach to coach and institution to institution. You're also right in regards to the quote, rules of renewing a scholarship. And in the old days, basically, if you as long as you weren't arrested, as long as you didn't flunk out, or you weren't as long as you went by the rules of the code, that scholarship was renewed. But the more we've got into the quote business, the more of these kids continue to be, my words, run off. You know, most of our coaches deny that occurs, but it absolutely happens. In regards to the oversigning, some conferences are actually instituting their own rules saying you cannot oversign. But, and I don't know specific instances of Purdue or Illinois or Indiana, but I think why these coaches are oversigning is for a couple of reasons. One, because they know that there are academic problems on their present squad. They know that they can take a scholarship away from a walk-on that they had given a scholarship, or that they can turn a kid into a walk-on. They can sit down with the number 11 or number 12 kid on the squad and say, you know, I love you. I want you to be at my school. I want you to play on my basketball team, but I'm going to have to take this scholarship back. So the rules have been liberalized in regards to how you take those scholarships. I think most of these guys know what's going to happen on their squad as they're recruiting. And in the sport of basketball, I think specifically in the state of Indiana, part of it is they just, you know, they don't want to walk away from the top kid, or else they're going to get hammered in the press.
But do you think though that yeah, okay, you don't want to walk away from the top kid, but also are you sending the wrong message to possibly the Indianapolis high school coaches if all of a sudden one of those guys is the odd man out and you're running to Maryland to sign one of the top players?
Well, I think it will come back to bite you. And again, I'm talking generically. It will come back to bite you if you walk away from a academically healthy and physically healthy and a good person healthy. If you walk away from that kid, then you're in a boatload of trouble. And I would guess you're not going to be invited back into that high school or that area to recruit. But if you can walk away from a kid and say he was not academically accepted, we've placed him in a junior college, or we've placed him in a fifth-year high school, and we're looking out for his best interest, then I think you survive. I think you survive if you take a scholarship from the 12th kid or 11th kid, turn him into a walk-on. But you know, Joe, you make a good point. I mean, if you're going to walk away from the best basketball player in Indianapolis, then because there's a better kid in another state, you're gonna pay that price someday recruiting.
Hey, I think
they know what they're doing.
But to go over the amount, do they have to? I mean, I thought it was one. Now being over three over, is that a situation where you have to tell the NCAA, you know, without telling anyone else, hey, look, it looks like such and such and such and such are going to go pro, and it looks like this guy who's been hurt five times is probably, you know, just going to be not going to be, you know, able to play anymore. Do you have to show a reason
no,
why,
I think
why
what you're asking, not... though, does the NCAA get involved in this oversigning at all?
No, because don't forget, because I know you two guys know this, but again, for your listeners, as crazy as this sounds, the NCAA does not administrate the NLI, the National Letter of Intent. The NCAA does not have rules over the National Letter of Intent. The NCAA says, here's how many scholarships you can have on your team. But they do not worry about the rules of the NLI, the National Letter of Intent, the thing that all these kids are going to sign on February 6th. So, no. They do. If I oversign, you know, a basketball team by three kids, I don't owe anybody an explanation. I can do what I want unless my conference has a rule that I cannot oversign. But I don't have to answer that question to anybody. What I cannot do is on the first day of summer school, I can't have 15 Division I scholarships on my basketball team, or 16 or 17. I cannot do that.
Now, let me ask you this question. How did you know, the who's the kid that went to? It's going to be going to Syracuse now. That signed with IU originally. Oh, gosh.
We had a kid out of Lawrence Central.
No,
no, or not Lawrence Central. He was a, I know it's a public school kid, I think, out of Indianapolis.
Yeah, now
yeah, kid out of Broad Ripple.
Now, he was found that he couldn't stay in school anymore because he didn't get the appropriate grade in his summer school class. Now, here's the question I got to ask. They were won over with him, so was he able to get his school paid for, seeing how they were won over in summer in that first summer session?
Well, I think they it would come down to how many of those kids were in summer school. I'm relatively certain all those kids were probably on campus because that's just how everybody does it now. I honestly don't know how the payment of that would have worked. And the only thing I know about that young man's academics is what I read in the newspaper. And frankly, I hate it when kids' academics have to, you know, when you, me, and the whole world knows their personal academic issues. I don't know if he was in one class or a series of classes. It appeared by reading the newspaper that he was in some classes just trying to get eligible to enter Indiana. But I don't know who would have paid for that.
Okay.
I mean, I know they do it right at Indiana. I know Tom does it right. But I don't know. It's quite simple. Either the kid paid or you paid. I just don't know who did.
Bill, you talked about, before we went on the air, the recruiting deregulation package. Do you want to add some comments about that?
Well, I can go as long as you want, but I'd send two major messages, or at least I heard two major messages from the NCAA last week. Deregulation, which is probably a pretty happy word for any of us. But the other thing they said, and this is, frankly, this is moving the earth. This is significant. The NCAA and its membership came out and said, we are no longer interested, and these are my words, but we are no longer interested in being bound or worried about a equal or level playing field, that we now understand that it's realistic to understand that some schools have more money, some schools have bigger buildings, some schools can pay more to coaches, some schools can travel by charter and some can't. So and the NCAA and the schools over the last 100 years have never admitted that. Thus, they've always tried to keep it even for Evansville, so Evansville could do the same thing as IU and Purdue. And the bottom line is you can't legislate that. And the bottom line is Evansville are never going to have everything that IU and Purdue does. So with that statement and with the issue of deregulation, they changed a bunch of rules. And on one hand, I think it's healthy for the coaches, for the college coaches. On the other hand, it's presented a whole new set of challenges for high school coaches and kids. For example, In this conversation, this may sound trivial, but for those of us that either have kids being recruited or coaches who have had kids recruited, there are no longer any rules starting August 1st on how many times a coach can Facebook you, tweet you, text you, or call you. In other words, Indiana can call a kid every day or text him 7 times a day.
Wow.
So there's no more rules. Also, in the sport of
football. So coaches in the last few years who got penalized or could have lost their positions for those things, now they wouldn't have any problems at all.
Well, again, it can't start till August 1st, and I don't think it can start till their junior year. But
okay,
yeah, no longer.
But those things are changing to where it's unlimited now.
It's unlimited. Another example is in the different sports, it was called the baton rule. Only so many of your coaches could be off-campus recruiting. Now, whatever number of coaches you're allowed to have by rule, they can all be off-campus at the same time. For example, in the sport of football, they can now hire a recruiting coordinator that is not a coach. That traditionally wasn't okay. There was a rule, believe it or not, on the size by inches, and the number of pages and the amount of color on yearbooks or summarizing your seasons. There's no longer any limits on that. So, you know, Indiana Purdue can have a 750-page summary yearbook, and Evansville can have a 22-page yearbook.
Interesting.
But They also they can now provide money for medical purposes other than just injuries, for academic issues outside of just the, books and whatnot.
Expand on that. Academic issues outside of books, whatever. What would fall into that?
Well, what they're saying is that they can spend extra financial support on academic support, career counseling, personal development, and medical expenses. I'll just give you an example. I won't go into who it was, but early in my career at the NCAA, we were investigating a basketball program. In the course of going through these interviews, this young man was a famous basketball player, came from a very difficult background. He literally had almost like two sets of teeth in his upper mouth. The poor kid could never have went to the dentist because of his personal issues, financial issues. And the school that he was at wasn't allowed to help him. Now they could help him. They could help make his mouth right.
Okay.
And that's good if you're at a big-time school. That's probably frustrating if you're at Ball State, Bowling Green, or Evansville because you're not made of money. But that, again, go back to the top of the conversation, it's a day of history because they said we're no longer worried about keeping the playing field level.
Wow. Okay. Hey, for our listeners, when a program, a basketball program or a football program, sits down to look at the NCAA rule book for their sport, just for our listeners, how many pages are we looking at in that book?
Well, I think there's probably 400 or 500 pages, but I'll be honest, I always kind of play this both ways because I worked so many years there. It's not that difficult to go by the rules. It's just that it's kind of stupid sometimes. And I think what they're doing is taking the stupid stuff out of the rule book. I mean, there was actually a rule that you could give a kid a bagel, but you couldn't put cream cheese on it. And I'm not exaggerating. That rule is now gone because of this deregulation. I think the other thing they got to do in reality is face reality. You know, when a football coach comes into a high school and they're walking down the hallway and the junior kid that's 6'5 or 6'4 walks by, you've got to be able to stop and say more than hello, you know?
Yeah.
Because that happens every day, and they ought to take that pressure off of the coach. So I think it appears that they're getting rid of the stupid rules and they're, frankly, the whole Twitter texting thing, you know, you can't control that anyway, and it's really not killing anybody. So I think it's probably smart. I don't need my son getting 75 texts, but on the other hand, I guess if we look at this big picture, we can do that. We can understand that. They're also going to, they're going to limit, in-person scouting of opponents. So I think that's probably a budget issue.
Okay. So in-person scouting, I mean, they can't go watch a team play in person.
Well, Dayton cannot go watch Butler play in person.
Really?
It's not scouting high school kids. It's now scouting Europe. This rule had to do with your opponent. And honestly, I think it comes down to a budget issue and probably because that coach is at a scouting will now be in a high school game recruiting these kids.
I see. Bill, let me ask you something before we let you go. And there's so much stuff. I knew that once we started talking to you about some of this NCAA stuff, it would just open the dam because there's just so many things that people want to know about and don't understand. But we've got the move to these mega conferences. Does the NCAA weigh in at all on the size or the movement of teams between the conferences?
Well, obviously I'm not intimately involved in this last rash of changes over the last 3 years, but I would tell you that it would be my best understanding that the NCAA is not, because for the previous 23 years they weren't. The NCAA does not control TV except during basketball tournament. The NCAA does not control conferences. Conferences are run by their own members. I think everybody would admit, or at least I hope they would if they cared about college athletics, it's a mess. I mean, I was sitting at dinner last night and my eighth grade son asked me I mean, I turned to him and I said, "Now, is Utah in the Pac-10?" And then I was thinking, "What is it, the Pac-12 or is it the Pac-11?" I'm kind of a guy that likes to think I know athletics. And my eighth grade son follows all that stuff. He goes, he paused because we were watching Utah. And he's like, "Dad, you know, I'm not sure. They were in the Mountain West, but they were going to go to the Big East." And I said, "No, that's San Diego State going to the Big East. But I don't think, you know, blah, 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 blah." So, no, the NCAA is not involved in that at all. My personal opinion, I think many others, it's a mess. I mean, there are people in panic mode. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, where is South Florida's in the Big East? Where are they going to play? You know, now that the Catholic Seven, you know, or yeah. five have left, and you know, Butler doesn't know where they're playing next year because they probably want to go with Dayton and Xavier to the new Catholic League, but Butler's not Catholic, and you know, it's a mess. It's a mess.
Bill, it was so great to have you, and we're going to get you back here. I had several questions I didn't get a chance to ask this time, so I'll ask them next time we have you. You always bring so much insight, information, and the great thing about it is you communicate it so well. So thank you for being on with us and continuing, reigniting our bro romance.
Well, take care, you guys, and Happy New Year to your listeners.
All right, Bill, thanks for joining us. We're going to go to break, folks. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
Mr. Biden, come on down here.
Help me, Jesus. Help me, Jewish God. Help me, Allah. Ah! Help me, Tom Cruise.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're joined by Indy Hoops correspondent Don Schulteis. Don, I get the first question. I've been hearing so much about Basil Smotherland has improved over the last couple of years. I wanted to see if you've seen him play and get your opinion on him.
Joe, you'll be glad to hear that, yes, he has definitely improved the last couple of years. He started his high school career at Heritage Christian and moved over to Lawrence North to play for Jack Kiefer last year. I think he went through a little bit of a transition period at Lawrence North last year, but they are a much improved team, and really he is one of the reasons. He's made a big difference. He's long. He's gotten stronger. He can score. He's physical. So I think he's going to help Purdue next year. Lawrence North is currently 10-3, and I'd say has as good a shot as anybody in the sectional. They play in the sectional with Federal, Warren Central, Tech, among others, and so it's going to be just kind of a beat-em-up kind of sectional. But they are definitely a team that is going to be needs to be reckoned with, and Basil has really helped them improve this year. So good things for Purdue next year with him joining.
Well, we don't know about that. Hey, Don, it's good to have you back on the show, and you probably heard a little bit with Bill Somm and Mike Pegram earlier. It's a good discussion, both about some of the recruits, some of the things going on in Indy on the football side, the NCAA, and now we're talking Indy Hoops with you. They just got done with the city tournament up in Indianapolis, and I know Coach K, the other Coach K, Krzyzewski was in town, and Brad Stevens got out to some games. Can you give us kind of an update, a review, and some thoughts on the city tournament up in Indianapolis, where there's just some outstanding players?
Yeah, Monday night was the championship game, as we talked about last week, and both Tech and Cathedral, my two favorites, did make the final. And the imposter Coach K was in the house, no doubt about it. He was sitting under the north basket in a nice plush chair. I had a bird's eye view of him, and he attracted a crowd before, and at halftime he got out of there a little bit, a few minutes before the end of the game. I think one of his assistants was with him. I'm not sure if Collins or is it Wojciechowski that used to play for him or whatever, but it looked like he was with him down
there. When the word went around that Coach K was in the house, was there some confusion that they thought maybe I was there?
Yeah, I got a ton of texts saying, hey, I hear your brother's watching the Tech Cathedral game. But no, we quickly dispelled that and said the imposter is here. He was joined, and they weren't sitting together, I might add. Brad Stevens was in the crowd, actually. He was sitting in a area where there were several Cathedral fans, so he participated in watching that game. And I was told that they were there to watch the big boy, Trey Lyles, as we talked about it. I know you asked Pegram about Trey, and I was happy to have him confirm the comments that I've been talking about. He is a special one, but I will tell you that Cathedral really put the hammer to him.
And you were really impressed with IU recruit signee Colin Hartman. You felt like his game is he's recovering from those injuries. His game is stepping up, and I know Mike Pegram felt the same way. You know, he said he's not a banger, and I agree. I mean, when I saw him play, I didn't think that. But overall, you felt really good about the breadth of his game.
Oh, I think it all came together Monday night, and I was pleased that it was a big game for Cathedral, you know, a championship game, and he came to play. He had 13, 14 points, 14 rebounds, 3 block shots. He played really consistent and solid defense. He helped out on Trey Lyles. He wasn't the number one responsibility for that. They had a couple of other kids that took care of the primary assignment, but he was always close to him to help on the double team when he got the ball in the paint. And Cathedral limited Trey Lyles to 2 field goals. He ended up going to the line several times and ended the game with 11 points and 9 rebounds. But he was clearly frustrated. In fact, Colin Barthel for Cathedral, he's a junior. He's long and lean, 6'7". I think there's some talk that he could be going on to the next level. It's in some capacity, whether it be low Division I or mid Division I or Division II possibly. But he played an outstanding defensive game on Trey. I had to laugh. Every time Trey got the ball and faced the basket, Colin would stick his hand right in his face, right in his eyesight, so that he wouldn't have a good look at the basket. And by the third quarter, it was clearly frustrating him. And I'll tell you, Cathedral went on to dominate the game. They really put together, probably for the first time this year, 4 really solid quarters as a team. And if this is what they can do, they're going to be tough to beat coming down the stretch and going into the tournament. And I know I say that a lot about a lot of teams, but Coach K, there are an incredible number of good teams up here, and it literally is week, game to game, where people get, you know, beat. Other people keep on going. I know every week I seem to have a new top 2 or 3 teams, but that's just the way it is this year up here in Indy.
So let me ask you this, Don. Brad Stevens is in the crowd. Who's he looking at, or is he trying to stay there in case something falls through with Hartman, or what was your sense? I don't think a guy that busy would just be out to watch a basketball game. He had to be there looking at somebody, at least that he felt like Butler had an interest in or might have an interest in Butler.
Yeah, I think in addition to Trey Lyles, for even Coach K, I think they were there to watch Jalen Coleman of Cathedral. He's a sophomore. I know I talked about him earlier in the year when we profiled a few of the top players up here in the different classes. Jalen is a 6'2 shooting guard. He's a slasher. He's got a fluid and pretty shot from the outside. He can elevate. He needs to get stronger, and he needs to get better, but he's only a sophomore. And but he's got all the tools. I mean, his vertical jump is probably in the 30s, and he can get open and make a move off the dribble or pull up from anywhere and shoot the ball over people. So I think that Brad was probably there to watch Jalen even more than Trey, because I agree with Mike Pegram. I think that Trey Lyles is probably focused on two or three programs, and my vote is he goes to Kentucky. So I don't think that Brad Stevens is really interested in a one-and-done player. I'm not sure about the Hartman situation. I mean, I really do think that Hartman will get the opportunity to prove himself at IU, and I think he can play at that level if, you know, he continues to get better and gets healthy. The irony of the whole thing is he came back for the city championship on Monday, and my sources tell me he's been out the last two or three days because he's got the flu up here. So he just can't get a break with regards to getting fully healthy and back. But hopefully he'll be able to shake that, and that team can continue to play together and roll on.
Well, we want you to hang around for the rant, Don, and we'll be talking different high school, college, and other topics. But before we go to break here in a minute, I do want to mention to our listeners, especially those who are IU-focused, Colin Hartman's a very good player, and we're not saying that he's not good enough to be at IU. I think it comes back to a lot of us are wondering about the over-signings and how that falls and making sure that the guys that are supposed to go pro go and scholarships are there. Hartman can shoot it, and he can come in, if nothing else. He can be out on that perimeter and get the kickouts from the low post guys and the Yogi Ferrell penetrations and kickouts into the three-point line area. And the fact that he's not 6'1", you know, he's much taller. What, he goes about 6'7", Don?
Yes.
He's going to be able to get his shot off on a lot of people, and if you add the ability to put the ball on the floor or to flash into that middle, add a little jump hook into his repertoire if he doesn't already have it, gets a little more physical, and they will put him through a heck of a physical program. You know, he's going to be a nice player, but he could be a nice player at Butler as well. And so we appreciate the update on the Indy Hoops. We're going to get ready to go to break, but hang around, Don, for the rant portion of the show to our listeners. That's coming up after this break. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
All right, let's go, handsome. Come on. Not you, fat Jesus. Slide it on back. You, pretty boy.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And now back to the Coach K and Joe Show, better known as the last section as The Rant. And I don't know if any of you guys got to listen to the Dan Dockett show yesterday, but he was on quite a rant about the movement. Did any of you guys get to hear that?
Yes, I did. I did hear Danny Boy rip on the movement. He talked about each scholarship being worth at least $25,000 a year, and how IU is getting very little for that investment this particular year.
I think Double D was working for ratings there. I mean, now, Joe, you're not going to press the button on the movement, are you?
No, actually, that's what he did yesterday. And, you know, I'm a responsible – wait a second, here it is. That he played that multiple times during his show.
You know, you know what I think? I think Dan's been listening to our show, and he heard that on our show, and that's when he put that in.
I don't know. All I know is, you know, I think that just my opinion is, and I'm an outsider looking in, you know, very much an outsider.
And you are an outsider.
It is the fact that I think that maybe the casual fan at IU kind of hyped these kids up. I don't think they realize they have Watford and Oladipo. They had quite a bit coming back, and you know, other than Yogi, the rest are freshmen.
Joe, you are
playing
the
like
toilet
freshmen.
Paper to the toilet. That's what you are. You're an outsider.
that's
you're not
right.
A part of the flush.
Hey,
so,
but not trying to change subject. But one of our main sponsors is Josh Houchin, and he wrote in about what you guys feel about Michigan possibly being ranked number one when the new...
And I agree. We're going to talk about that in depth. I've got a question here, though, that I need to answer, and then we're going straight to Michigan, and we're talking to Kurt and all that about that. I got a question from Dave. Got it a couple days ago. What do you think about Jasper basketball team at this point in the season? I've been able to see him play a couple times. They're 6-6. They worked their way back from a 3-6 record. We've commented before that offensively they have some struggles. They seem to do a good job defensively. They're big. They're thick players, what I call husky, athletic players, so they take up a lot of space. I think a couple of their guys have seen some improvement on the shooting. But all I can say is they're beating the teams that they need to beat. And I think in the sectional, the group that makes up that sectional, they have just as good a chance of winning it as anybody, even though Vincennes looks to be the class of that sectional. Head-to-head, they have not, what I would call, dominated the sectional opponents. Right now, Jasper's 6 wins are against Mount Carmel, Bedford North Lawrence, Boonville, Washington, Pike Central, and Forest Park. That's a combined record of 27-56. So the teams that they're beating, they should beat. They're not very good. They have... Dubois coming up, 4-10. Even though that's a good county rivalry, I don't think that Jasper's going to stub their toe there. And then they have a big game with it was always a big game when I was coaching and playing there with New Albany. And even New Albany's a bit down this year at 7-5. So I think the rest of the way with their schedule, the Cats are in a position that if they play well, they can pick up as many wins as they could losses. And possibly in the season with a winning record, because the competition this year, which is nothing to do with Jasper, that's the schedule they play, those teams seem to be down a little bit. So, Dave, that's the best I can tell you at this point. They're going to give you a great effort physically. They're going to give you a strong effort defensively because of their size and the space they take up. It's just a matter of can they dial it in on the offensive end, and I know Coach Gable and his staff are working to do that. So that answers that question. Let's get back to Michigan, the Maize and Blue, one win away from being number one, and I say that because they got the Illini coming up. Let's rant about this. No one wants to rant?
Well, I'll jump in on it. I think Michigan right now is playing like the number one team in the country. I mean, they had their moments against Purdue the other night, but every time you play a Big Ten game, it's gonna be like that. But they're gonna be tough to deal with. And IU, you know, I always go back to IU because I'm an alum there. But they got a heck of a week coming up with Michigan State, Purdue, and then they got Michigan, Mighty Michigan, a week from tomorrow night. Thankfully, it's at Assembly Hall. Kurt, what do you think?
Oh, I'm very much impressed with Michigan. I think they're really good. I want to see them defend a really, really good team with all those guys. But on the offensive end, they've got a lot of sparks, especially with Burke. He gets in that lane and pitches to the corners, and they got some knockdown shooters. So, yeah, so far so good for Wolverine.
For Josh Houchin, who's not going to be happy with my total response, here's what I got to say. I like Michigan. I think they showed some mental toughness in coming back against Purdue, a gritty team, not a great team, but a gritty team that Matt Painter has got improving game after game after game. They got down. It looked like Purdue was going to be able to be right in there till the end, and Michigan picked it up and got the win, which they should have. Having said that, Yes, they are a very good shooting team. The problem is, guys, I'm going to go back to Ohio State on this. They depend on that perimeter shooting. And I don't know. I know I only coached for 15 years on the high school level and the three-pointer. I mean, when you live by that three, when you live by that perimeter shot, you got to be willing to accept that there are nights that you're not going to come out and shoot that ball well. And I just do not believe that they have the post game, the ability to score in the post when they need to, that a lot of people are overlooking. I'm not going to overlook that. I do think they're an exceptional team. I think they have depth. I think they can defend you. I think they can hurt you in the transition and full court game. And Burke is tough. He really is. But I still wonder and worry about that inside game, and I just wish I would see some development of that. And Josh Alchin, get on me if you want, but I haven't seen the inside game develop yet. But they got a really good team, and you know what, guys? They got some youngsters on that team, so they're going to be right in the thick of things for the next couple years.
I agree. I think they're going to be tough to beat, and Bayline. I think you pronounce it Bayline, or is it
Bayline?
Bayline. He's done a heck of a job bringing that program back, and I will say sometimes I look at him and he looks like he's so wrapped up in the game or somewhere else. He kind of talks to himself. He's got a nervous twitch, and so he feels the pressure of bringing that thing back, and. I think it's only going to help the Big Ten, and it's going to be tough for everybody to have to play him and for years to come because he's got it back. And Zach Irvin, I will throw this in, Zach Irvin from Hamilton Southeastern is going to be enrolling there, and he's not too bad. He's one of the top players up here in this area, and he'll be a nice addition to that team next year.
Kurt, why does Michigan and Michigan State do such a good job of recruiting in Indiana?
Well, Michigan State, they've always did really well in Indiana. Now that Dane Fife's on the staff, that helps. And also, I believe Lavelle Jordan used to coach at Butler. He's one of the main reasons why they've been able to come down here and dip Indiana under Beeline. And I remember seeing Beeline at the games when Yogi Ferrell played against Forest Park two straight years. Actually, Josh Alchin and I got to chat a little bit with Coach Beeline. Josh was on cloud nine, but I think that's become a big part of that.
Well, I just think it's interesting. And, we had North Carolina messing around in Indiana and some of those other ACC teams. But I just hate that some of the better players get out of the state. And I know that, Illinois can jump in here, but I think Tom Crean has served notice that we're going to get at IU who we need to get. I know Matt Painter would like to do a better job of that. And Joe, I would just ask you, are you disappointed in maybe some of the recruiting in Indiana that Purdue doesn't do?
Well, they got in late on the Gary Harris deal. I don't know if Gary Harris would have been interested in Purdue, even though we were one of the finalists. But
Joe, why would they get in late on Gary Harris? Why would they get in late on that guy?
I am not sure, but Joy Holmes is an All-American, the best female basketball player that Purdue's ever had. Glenn Robinson, I'm not quite sure what happened there. I mean, there are two big whiffs right there that I'm just not quite sure about. I mean, even, and also I want to remind our people real quick before I finish, we've got 90 seconds and we will be going on to live, but we'll continue on. But,
do you think Painter was spending too much time talking to Missouri during that time when he should have been out recruiting?
I'm not sure because, if they need a shooter, I mean, I know that the Dunham kid from Butler, I don't know if he was ever recruited. And, there have been some pretty big whiffs. But,
I think Dunham slipped through the cracks for a lot of people, honestly. That was a big win for Butler. But, Donnie, you just did an ouchie on Matt Painter in that Missouri comment.
Well, it is the rant, right? It is the rant, and I know there's a lot of Purdue fans that are thinking it, and I just wanted to speak for them and say it.
Well, you know, that you have two Purdue legacies that fell through the cracks, you know, and a lot of people thought maybe the younger Robinson maybe wasn't interested in following his dad, kind of like Richie Mount tried to follow Rick, which, you know, that we can't compare that to this situation. But I think that I don't know if Purdue didn't, they wouldn't, I don't know, I'm not quite sure why you wouldn't at least take a look at him. I mean, you know, it baffles me that neither one really had much interest. Harris Late, I don't know if they ever did a whole lot with, you know, with Robinson.
Well, let me pull another team in here. Kurt Gooksell, I want you to start this. Louisville gets that number one ranking, has lost a couple games now. I looked at Coach Pitino on TV. You know, he still dresses dapper. Man, he looks bad. He looks like he hadn't slept in 6 weeks. Where's U of L? Are they going through that mid-season or mid-to-late season lull that they seem to have where, you know, they make it scary for the fans and all of a sudden they catch fire again? Kurt, your comments on the Cardinals out of Louisville right now.
Well, I watched both games very intently. The Syracuse game, they're right there. I don't know how they lost that game. They made the bad pass. Siva got in the lane and thought he saw something that didn't. Pitino was mad that Russ Smith didn't go to the right place. And so they lose that game at the end against Syracuse, which, I mean, that's always a good game. There's nothing to be ashamed about there, although it was Louisville. They probably should have won that. Then they go to Villanova. And there are some guys in that game that just didn't show up. They shouldn't have been in that game with Villanova, or they should have pounded Villanova, but Siva didn't play very well there. Bahana didn't play well, and Russ Smith didn't play well, and that's why they lost that game. I think they play good defense every night, but they've got to find some offense. That's where a guy like Couric the last couple years picked them up with some outside shooting, and there's one Achilles heel with the Cardinals, it's their outside shooting. Hancock is supposed to be that guy, Luke Hancock, who redshirted last year after coming from George Mason. And Pitino, his coaches often do, and Knight was a master at this. All the guy that wasn't there yet or the guy that was redshirted was always going to be the best player on the team. And Louisville fans were waiting for Luke Hancock to bust out. And if you didn't hear Pitino say that, you'd think he had a nice year and he's playing pretty well. But they put all this hype on Hancock, and he hasn't really shot the ball well. But I think offensively, to answer your question in a simple way, is why they're struggling right now. Not their defense, because they continue to play good defense.
Kerr, what did you think about Siva coming down in the Syracuse game and basically turning the ball over two or three times in a row to where Louisville didn't even have a shot at the basket? I thought they still could have pulled that win out.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. They were right there at the end. Siva made the bad pass and a couple of trips down the court before that. He made some mistakes, and that's what you get with him. And normally he's really pretty good. If you're going to rely on somebody, he's usually right there to be a pretty good player. And it's just, you know, they're going through a tough stretch right now. And for all their angst and agony the last two games, they get Georgetown on the road tomorrow. And that's not going to be a picnic either, because Georgetown, as Notre Dame can attest to, really, really good.
You know, Siva, you'd rather have him than not have him, but he gets himself in trouble when he gets that penetration going and he leaves his feet. And he left his feet and he looks, I don't know, he's looking almost parallel back and throwing that ball. I don't see how he could have really seen if there was an opening or not, because he had already gotten himself into some of the teeth of the defense. The pass underneath wasn't a terrible pass. It just was a little low, and they got caught underneath the backboard, basically.
Yeah.
And it just tried to go too quickly picking it up. But he's going to give you some wonderful things. But when he leaves his feet, it's just like when you throw the football, some, you know, a couple things are bad can happen. And when he stays on his feet, he just helps him so much more. But I still think Slick Rick needs to get his PR firm to get him some makeup artist out there before some of these games, because he looks like he's had no sleep for a while.
Yeah, it's what I've listened to some of the
shows down here in Louisville. Rick's always talking about he's hasn't slept since the last couple of those games, so you're probably on to something. And, of course, he makes it out to be a lot more than it is. You know, they've dropped two basketball games to good teams, one on the road and one at home.
Coach K, remember when you coached? I mean, there were plenty of times you didn't sleep and your stomach was turning.
And I didn't like to talk to anybody either a lot of times. And that didn't stop Don and Jim and a few of my brothers from coming in the door anyway. They just
said they had all the answers.
We'll just open the fridge and have some beer and we'll talk.
We'd have to have some tough question to ask him.
Why did he not think of this?
And why did they never practice this during the game, during practice time? And why they never did that? And then he would, you know, look at us half cockeyed and tell us, get out.
I always loved having you guys in. I'm just glad that close to 7 out of 10 times we won and didn't lose because your questions would have been. It's tough having six brothers that all know a little bit about the game. Let me jump over to Butler, guys. Big win against Gonzaga on TV. They had the game day there. The Butler kid hits the half-court shot, wins $18,000. If you caught the beginning of the show, folks, Joe had keyed up the call of the Butler shot. And, Joe, you can key that up again if you want. And it just sent – it tingled it. But that was a great game against Gonzaga. I know they lost at LaSalle by 1 point.
It's time for the coach.
He's keying it up?
I'm getting
it there. It was a great game. And for Gonzaga to come in and Butler to play so well without Rodney Clark, moved up in the rankings to number 9. We got to feel good about the Butler Bulldogs at this point.
Yeah, they're pretty good. They, you know.
What do you mean they're pretty good? Come on, man, give them some love.
I know. I like them too, but let's not turn them into the '86 Celtics. I mean, they lost to LaSalle. They shouldn't have lost that game, although it was on the road. But you know, that's the way it goes.
It's interesting. They were a 3-point underdog.
Yeah, I could see that too. But, I mean, the eye test says they go in there and beat LaSalle. But that's just the way it is on the road. Everybody, you know, the Valley got hit with some road problems. Creighton lost. Last night, the VCU in the A-10 lost to Richmond, I think. So it's just life on the road. But that Butler game against Gonzaga was great. Again, it goes back to, like, maybe Indiana, Kentucky not playing. They're talking about Gonzaga and Butler continuing that series. And those guys will work it out, which is great because that was really, really fun, you know, down the stretch. Guys made big shots after big shots, and that was super.
Oh, big shot after big shot, big rebounds, big defensive plays, and to get that steal. Think about this, guys.
Okay, guys.
You're in historic Hinkle Fieldhouse.
Here it is.
Okay, pull it up,
Joe. Will be David Stockton. David Stockton gets it right now. Throws it up top. Jones intercepts it in the front court. 1 second. Puts up a floater. And he got it. 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 Roosevelt Jones with a runner at the buzzer. And Butler has knocked off Gonzaga. 64-63. Unbelievable. And it is absolute bedlam at Hinkle Fieldhouse.
Holy cow. What a finish.
Wow. Great call. You guys made such a great call.
I love guard there at the end going, wow, what a finish. He's the color man for the Butler.
What a great venue, though, Kurt. You've got historic Hinkle Fieldhouse. You've got two teams basically close ranked in the top 10. You've got the name Stockton out on the court. You get Jones, who played big against the Hoosiers. And, wow, what an ending.
No, that was awesome. I mean, that's great for Butler. I mean, they're until the LaSalle game, they were on the right half of those buzzer beaters. Of course, Clark beat the horn against Marquette out in Maui, and Barlow did it against IU. And, I mean, if nothing else, it keeps you watching those games because, I mean, I sat there when Gonzaga, I know this sounds like, you know, I'm full of crap, but when they're taking that ball in half court, you don't think it's over. You do not think it's over. You think something's going to happen. And it did.
Yeah, you'd think that. And even with Gonzaga, if Gonzaga's on the other side of the ball in this situation, you think something can happen because those teams play so hard and so aggressively, and they have so much confidence for their size of schools and where, you know, traditionally they would be ranked in college basketball.
Well, and also the fact that Michael's been on here twice before big games, that I think the Coach K and Joe show might have a little to do with it.
Wasn't it a little bit ironic also that John Stockton, NBA great John Stockton's son, was throwing that inbounds pass, and he left it up center, and it got picked off.
You know, one of the toughest things in basketball, though, guys, whether it's little guys, high school, college, pro, and we know that when the Celtics, Burns steals the ball from Johnny Most, is taking that ball out of bounds. Yeah. And making the right decision in those critical points. You know, I know it's done all the time, but you really have to understand where people are moving to, what you think the defense, and you can't wait and hope for a better option. You got to find that first opening and get that ball in.
Well, why wouldn't you throw it towards your own basket, some action going that way? Teams do that all the time when they waste inbounds plays under normal circumstances, instead of getting something going to the basket. That drives me nuts with people that don't try to score off inbounds plays. Why wouldn't you throw it back towards your bench, back towards your basket, instead of up for grabs at the mid-court stripe? Because if you throw it anywhere near that free-throw line, they're never going to get it up the court in 3-4 seconds. But that's second-guessing, too. But anyway,
it's a good point, though, Kurt. It's a good point, and I have to be honest with you. I just wondered how that all happened that way, too. I thought of many different options that could have been chosen that, yeah, there may have been some risk involved, but probably a lot less riskier with the time left on the clock than that.
I agree because, like I said, I mean, it happens all the time on inbounds play, and that's why I love when you coach, because you had a whole book of inbounds plays that were infallible. They always work.
Absolutely. We scored on them
today. And that's what always drove me nuts about Knight. They never ran inbounds plays to score. They were always constantly throwing it across the 10-second line and then bringing it back up, because that's the way you steal points on inbounds plays. And I see it to this day, the good teams here in high school basketball especially score on inbounds plays.
Yeah, inbounds is the best time to score points, and after the other team scores is a great time, as the Hoosiers have shown us, too. Speaking of the Hoosiers, guys, we got Tom Izzo and those Spartans, those bully Spartans, coming up this weekend. And I know Joe probably won't mind if they throw a punch or two at the Hoosiers, but let's talk a little bit about this. Don, what do you think about the impending matchup of the Hoosiers and the Spartans?
I think it's going to be, it's not the toughest game to date, the toughest game to date. And I think that Tom Crean would love to beat his former mentor and head coach, because as a lot of listeners know, Crean used to be on that staff for Tom Izzo at MSU, so he knows the system well. And I'm sure Izzo would still like to, you know, bring the student in for a lesson, too. So I think it's going to be incredible. I watched the Hoosiers on Wednesday night live at Assembly Hall. Took them a little bit of time to get going, but once they started cooking, I thought that, you know, we started to see the team that was playing together a little bit earlier in the year, and not so much during this kind of slump period. But as I said earlier, I think the next three games are going to be, this week is going to be the toughest test for IU. Michigan State going to Purdue, and then Michigan coming back. So it's going to be brutal.
Kurt, when you look at this matchup, obviously Michigan State would like to play a physical game. The Hoosiers, although we can play physical, this could be a great time for our athletic ability, ball movement. You know, Coach Crean tweeted earlier this morning, and I agreed with him 100%, and I thought it was critical. He said, we don't want our guys to fall into the dribble penetration in that game. And I agree. I think we got to move the ball. We got to get Michigan State off where they want to be to open up opportunities for us, so we don't have to just play a physical game, which I think Michigan State wins.
Well, because a guy like Derek Nix is going to be in there pounded on Zeller, and so is Payne. And Payne, there's nobody playing better in the Big Ten than Payne. When, after he got into that fight with his roommate Brandon Dawson, he has exploded. And they're doing a good job. There's a lot of good matchups. Appling, very quick. He's the kind of guy like Farrell, and that'll be a good matchup. And on paper, and if you believe, again, we talked about the supposed depth that Indiana has, that's going to be key because Michigan State, they're not getting much from some of those guys. Some of those guys have hit a little wall. Denzel Valentine, he's a freshman, really good out of Lansing. He's kind of hit a wall. They also, Trice, the guys that are familiar with Trice, his dad played at Princeton and went on to Purdue and Butler. He's played very well early, although he's still a sophomore. And then Russell Byrd out of Fort Wayne, really good player. He hasn't found his rhythm. So Izzo's trying to get something going off that bench. But 5-on-5, at least at the beginning, it's going to be really, really good and really, really physical. And Indiana's going to have to play that way or find a way to get around that, as you mentioned, Coach.
Mike Ingram was on earlier in the show, Pigs.com, and for our listeners, be sure to check that site out. It's all got great stuff on IU and recruits, basketball, football, baseball. But he mentioned that he felt like Michigan State would have a little bit of advantage in these matchups in the guards and play just bigger and physical players for Michigan State.
Well, you know, yeah. I don't. Yeah, they've got a very big physical team, but at the same time, Kenny, do you have an IU shirt for me to borrow this weekend? Because I will definitely.
Well, what is your problem with Michigan State?
I think that Izzo is dirty. You guys can say whatever you want. I think Brandon Dawson's one of the biggest thugs. I hope to God
because he didn't go to Purdue.
No, has nothing to do with that. He's just a thug. And the thing is, IU is going to win by 20, and Brandon Dawson will be kicked out of the game because of hitting, trying to intimidate Cody Zeller.
Yeah, you know, Indiana. Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say that sounds like some dream world that a Purdue fan would be in, like Joe.
Oh, so you're saying it's a dream world that I picked IU to win. So you're truly not a IU
fan. Things by 20 and this guy's going to get kicked out of the game. Listen, I don't think Tom Izzo's dirty. I think Tom Izzo says, the officials will allow us to play this type of game.
How about rape, et cetera? He's as dirty as the Notre Dame football coach when it comes to things that have happened. You know, the girl that supposedly got raped at Notre Dame and then killed herself. I'm still disgusted and want to take a shower that the Notre Dame athletic director didn't cry when the kid got killed off the scaffolding or the girl that committed suicide. And Izzo is walking right along the same line. So
let's not equate anything that Izzo does to that garbage up there.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying, Joe, but I don't want to do that connection.
And then, Joe, if Indiana's up 20, I'm sure you'll be paying very close attention to Coach Crean's substitution pattern late in the game.
Yes, I will, because actually last game I thought that was kind of interesting because I guess I'm just one that always has been to the point that there are a lot of walk-ons that sit there and bust their ass. That might have been
maybe they don't. Maybe they don't bust their butt to play. Maybe they were messing around in practice.
Between you two. Hey, settle down. Kurt, he did. Joe, my partner in crime, Joe did tweet about that. Our Facebook about that, about those guys being in the game up 24 with a minute left. Why were they still in there?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I know Joe's stance, and I like to jab at Joe. But you know what? There's all kinds of circumstances. Maybe those guys just aren't good enough to play. This isn't intramural. This isn't name your little school in fifth and sixth grade. Who knows why they didn't play?
Hey, guys, if they've got their starter still in the game and you're up 25 with a minute to go, that's probably different.
I agree.
Or three or four shots could make a big difference on a run. And Coach, you gotta remember, you probably didn't want to sub too early either in these games. When you got something, you're at home, you want to make sure you take that thing to the bank. And
also, these guys like Sheehy, they haven't been playing that well. So maybe you get them, they're playing better, you keep them rolling, and you ride that momentum, hopefully, into the Sunday game.
Yeah, that's just an IU thing. That stuff doesn't bother me because that's a coach's prerogative to do what he wants to do in that. And I always equate it to baseball. You know, you can't steal up five runs. You know, okay, if the other team's going to quit, are they going to give their bats away when they're up and they're going to continue to quit, or the other team's going to leave their starters in, then you can take yours out. But every one of these circumstances, Penn State had their guys in. If the other team promises to quit trying, then you can empty your bench and let all the little cheerleading walk-on guys get in there that may have not practiced well or maybe not done what the coaches wanted them to do in the first place.
You're probably right. I remember a few years ago paying $40 for a ticket to go to the Hoosier game, and we were getting beat by Northwestern, I think, drilled, and we put a manager in at IU. So I don't know that I wanted to pay $40 to watch the manager play in a Big Ten game, but I get your point, Kurt.
I get Joe's point, too. Up 24 minutes ago, do something. Okay,
Izzo,
yeah.
I'm loyal to Josh Houchen, and Izzo's a thug. So there you go. I'm not, but then again, I'm not loyal to all of our sponsors because Harmon is a big Notre Dame fan, so.
Who's the best team in the country right now, Kurt? Start with you. I mean, it seems like if you get number one, you're going to get beat the next game. Who's the best team in the country? I mean, is there one, or do we have about five or six teams that are capable of being number one?
I think the latter, five or six teams that can be number one, because, I mean, it's just a matter of who you play that week. I mean, say a Louisville is number one, got to play Seton Hall in Pittsburgh during that stretch, but instead they've got to face the gauntlet, you know. You know, if Michigan comes out of this stretch, if they, you know, beat Purdue like they did, great. I mean, Purdue's still, you know, a work in progress, but they're not a slouch by any means. And they beat Illinois, a team, not bad. Then they deserve to be number one this week. I think it's a lot of who you play and when you play them and where you play them and who's injured, who's not playing well. And you just align yourself to get into that one or two seed in the tournament. If you can, you know, not lose games to put you in that position, I think you'll be all right at the end. The rankings, I mean, whatever.
Hey, Don, the pollsters don't, I mean, I don't think Kansas has lost. They don't jump Michigan and throw Kansas in there, do they?
I don't think they do, but I think Kansas will be right there knocking on the door. And I also agree with Kurt. I mean, I've seen all the top 10 teams play at one point and another, and they look great one time, and then they get upset the next week or don't play so well. And I just think it's going to be – I think we're in that period of time where teams have that – mid-season slump, and for whatever reason, they're going to get knocked off a couple of times, and it's going to be the teams coming out of that. Let's have this discussion in February. We can pick, I think, and get a clearer view of who's going to have that mojo going into the tournament, because that's
Kurt,
what
where's the Michigan Illinois game at?
Good question.
Is that at Illinois or is that at Michigan? Anybody know? Joe, can you pull that up and see? You know, I know Josh Houchen probably will hold this over my head, but the one thing I think about that game, Michigan and guys, I know I say this often when I talk about them, I don't think they're a physical team, and I think that bodes well for Illinois because Illinois is not a physical team. Used to say a finesse team. I like to say a soft team, and I think I'm more right on that.
Yeah.
If this game's in Illinois, I think that
Illinois
has a chance to win this basketball game because the contract. Both teams, when they're shooting well, are pretty tough. And obviously, if Michigan's shooting well and able to get up and down the court, that'll make it more difficult. But I do think that because they don't contrast each other on the physical side, it gives Illinois at least a bit of a chance to win this and knock Michigan off. But I think it has to be at Illinois for that to happen.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure where it's at.
It's at Illinois.
I didn't do my homework on that one. So.
Right.
Guys, the Harbaugh Bowl coming up. We've got another week before it happens. Intriguing, interesting, funny. I saw John interviewed, and he was this jovial, you know, the brother that likes to smile and talk. And I saw Jim being interviewed, and he was like, man, I'm not feeling, not that he doesn't feel good about it, but for him, it just seemed like it wasn't near as much fun to think about. Thoughts on that, guys?
I'll be honest with you. I am not looking forward to the game at all. I mean, it does not interest me one bit.
Really?
Being just not my two
really?
Teams, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, you don't like the coaching matchups, anything specific?
Not a Ravens fan, not a 49er fan. I like the quarterbacks. I mean, I think that's an interesting thing. Flacco, he's really good in this dynamic that this Kaepernick brings with this read option, stuff like that, which is new to the NFL. But I don't know. I don't feel it yet. Maybe by the time the game rolls around, I will.
Kurt, what do you see, though? Is it a quarterback matchup? Is it a receivers matchup? Or is it the defense? You know, both defenses are pretty solid. I mean, do you see anything? I mean, I know it's not intriguing to you, but is there anything specific that jumps out at you that becomes the focus of the matchup other than the brothers coaching against each other?
You know, it's hard to tell. You mentioned that both those defenses are really good, and the offenses are good. Both have good running games with Gore and the 49ers and Lewis and those guys with the Ravens. I can't decide where the game's going to come, where it's going to come down to, or what it's going to come down to, because both teams play every facet of the game pretty good.
Well, I know, Don, if you and I were matching up on the court or on the football field, the competitive part would be fun, but I don't know how much fun it would be for two reasons. One, I don't want my brother to beat me, and two, I don't want my brother to lose. I mean, it's great that they're there, though, because they win because they're in the Super Bowl, but then you have the aftermath of the second guessing and why didn't he do that and is he a better coach than him and that type of thing.
I think I agree with you. I happen to think that it's a great – I think it's going to be a great storyline on the Super Bowl that the brothers are going against each other. I just feel I've always respected both of them, particularly Jim going up through the college ranks. He's won everywhere he's been. And then when he cracked into the 49ers, it didn't take him any time at all to have a top-tier team, and here they are in the Super Bowl. And then John's just been solid over the years, and I just think it's awesome. And, boy, I'd hate to be their parents sitting there trying to view that game. And I know for some that don't understand or know this, Tom Crean's married to their sister, Joni, and he tweeted last week that he's going to be down watching them, and that'll be coming off the Michigan game, that they'll be all going to New Orleans to watch that Super Bowl. So it's just very interesting to see, you know, coaching minds and the coaching family and how it all matches up and plays out.
Coach, does the name Lou West ring a bell to you?
Lou West. Faintly.
Go on Donnie's point about Jim Harbaugh moving up the college ranks. Lou West was the gentleman that Indiana State hired instead of Jim Harbaugh for that job. That guy was a clown. And Indiana State, they're still paying for it today, although they're really, really good now. But Harbaugh was coaching at in the Pioneer League, the same league that Butler and U of E used to play in with the University of San Diego. Not San Diego State, but the University of San Diego. And he was in Terre Haute that he wanted to come back to the Midwest, you know, Indiana guy, as far as the Colts was concerned. He and West had that interview, and they chose Lou West.
Oh. You know, it goes back to that old, is it Garth Brooks, Unanswered Prayers? I'm sure he didn't get that job. He was really hurt. Only to find out that there was a bigger path he was going to follow. You know, one of our earlier guest guys, Coach Pat Blake from Chipola Junior College down in Florida, Mike Blake's son, he had applied for a cup to be an assistant at a couple Division I schools close by because he wanted to get closer to home, and he didn't get the job, only to be picked as the new head coach at Chipola and go start the season 18-0, and he's now 20-2 and 12th ranked in Division I junior college. So you just never know. I know I started out, I wanted to coach, become an assistant, would have been an assistant at Jasper. They chose not to hire me, and I end up the head coach out of college at Washington Catholic. And as my brother pointed out the other day, my first official victory on the high school level was at Washington Catholic, beating Jasper at Jasper. So you just never know. When you think this is the place that you're supposed to be or you want to be, and it doesn't work out, you just got to move with it. I mean, Jim Harbaugh you're right, Don and Kurt, he paid his dues all the way through college and in the pros and learning and then getting into coaching at the lower level and working his way up. I mean, you just got to give him credit. Yeah. And John, as an assistant, earned his way. And I've met Jack. I've met the dad. I spent 3 days with him at the Coach Crean father and son camp, and I mentioned this before on the show. You talk about just a great guy that, you know, reminds me a lot, Don, of our dad, Ed Schulteis, former basketball coach at Jasper and still around, athletic director. Just a great guy to be around. But what was so interesting, there's a loose ball. It was a father and son, 3-on-3-on-3-on-3. My team was against Jack. A loose ball hit the floor, and it wasn't the kids that got on the floor. It was 70-something-year-old Jack Harbaugh and Ken Schulteis diving on the loose ball. So it's just a great family. It really is. It's got to be exciting for them, as much as it's going to be nail-biting time. But you know what? They're all going to have good seats.
Well, another thing about this, both those seasons, the 49ers and the Ravens seasons, turned on – tough decision. Sometimes coaches and a lot of the bleeding hearts and a lot of the, you know, the feel-good fans, maybe like Joe about the substitution at the end of games, they don't like the tough decisions. Harbaugh had to make a change of quarterback. Jim, he went with Kaepernick instead of Alex Smith. John Harbaugh had to fire Cam Cameron, the guy that hired him when he was at Indiana.
Yeah.
To run the offense, you know, with the Ravens. They went with Jim Caldwell, the former Colts coach, and it seemed like both those decisions worked out very well. But at the time, everybody was screaming bloody murder. You can't replace your quarterback because that's going to damage Alex Smith's psyche, and he'll never come back from it. And you can't fire your offensive coordinator with 3 games to go. You'll never win in the playoffs doing that. Well, they make tough decisions, and sometimes Coach K knows. You got to make those tough decisions to get
ahead
in the
long run. Yeah, you got to make them, and you just got to go with them. And you're right, Kurt. You catch a lot, but you do what you believe is best for the group. And sometimes it's difficult, but that's what your job is, to do what's best for the group moving forward.
That's right.
All right, guys, we're hitting that 12:30. Here in 130 your place, we've been ranting, and I don't know, Kurt, you might have hurt Joe's feelings. I haven't heard from him for about this.
I got other work I got to do.
He does, and I appreciate Joe's efforts, whether it be marketing this show for you guys or doing all the little things that it takes. I know how tough it is to organize something like this, so. Although we have fun with Joe, we appreciate his efforts.
Well, thank you, Gook, but we're probably going to need a little assistance from you. I have talked to Mike Wire, and I do think within next week or the week after, we are going to be taking this show to Buffalo Wings and Rings for a live broadcast. We'll actually have to get out of our pajamas and actually put different clothes on and go and broadcast
awesome.
From there.
That'll be fun.
I've heard from a couple of the other owners that they definitely would like to bring the show out there for a few stops. So Buffalo Wings and Rings be a great place for us to go. But, you know, Kurt, you hit it. It does take a lot of effort to put the show together, and Joe does a great job. But you do a great job, and our contributors, Don, Bill Somm, you know, we have a lot of great guests that come on the show. And as I tell our listeners all the time, it's your show. Tell us what you think. Tell us what you want to hear, who you want to hear from. Yeah, we'll go out and get them, and we just have had a lot of fun doing this show. And when we're ranting, but afterwards we walk away and I think we're friends, but I know we're still brothers, at least on one side. So we've really enjoyed it. We had a great show today, guys.
Hey, Coach, one thing, I don't know if you guys touched on this, that Du Bois and Jasper matchup,
yes.
It's been postponed until Thursday, February 21st.
Okay, great.
I'm still waiting on the Forest Park Southridge game for tonight at Buechler. Forest Park, they kind of take hoops serious. I don't know if you knew that, but that's still on. So it looks like the Raiders and the Rangers are going to play one half of that big rivalry doubleheader tonight. So it was supposed to be really good, the Jeeps and the Wildcats and the Raiders and the Rangers. I think one half of it's going to go on. So it's getting a lot better weather-wise here, and that's the main reason. I can understand why the other games postponed, too, because it was brutal this morning.
Yeah, but the temperatures have warmed up, fortunately. We didn't get a whole lot in the Pocket City here in Evansville. Don, any last words for us, buddy, up in the Indy area?
Yeah, I just want to say that I'm sick and tired of hearing about Monte Teo. I mean, invisible girlfriend. I still don't understand it. I know he was probably duped, but he also contributed. I just wanted to tell and remind all the listeners, do the right thing. Tell the truth, because that'll always set you free. Because I'm so sick and tired of hearing about that. And then you had to listen to Lance Armstrong and Oprah. You know, here's a guy that ranted and raved about how innocent he was and about how good he was, and everybody else was jealous, and he would sue people that were telling the truth. And here he is. You know, I guess the cynicism is coming out. My gosh, when you think it's too good to be true, it probably is, isn't it?
And so, 60 Minutes, in the world of fact checkers that we have now all over the place, and we get it fact checked around here, they're going to be doing a little bit of a show on the fact checking of the things that Lance Armstrong had said, and they said several things were incorrect in that interview. So that'll be interesting to see. Hey, you guys have a great weekend. My partner in crime, Joe Milligan, tremendous job again. Be blessed and stay healthy and stay safe. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show. See you next week.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Join us next Friday from 11 to 1 for the next show. Until then, visit www.jaspertodayonline.com or go to iTunes to listen to podcasts of past shows. See you next week.